morning, everybody. I call the House Education Finance Committee to order, and I've been told we have a quorum, so we're going to head right over to minutes. Oh, yes, thank you. I forgot to say we have a quorum because Representative Pryor is on Zoom with us, joining us via Zoom with permission from the Speaker of the House in accordance with the House rules. So with that, Representative Purcell, have you had a chance to look at the minutes?
Madam Chair, I have, and I move their approval.
Thank you, Representative Purcell. Moves the approval of the minutes for March 23rd. Does anybody have any questions? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. The minutes for March 23rd are adopted. And with that, we have Representative Richardson joining us for House File 58. Welcome to the House Education Finance Committee, Representative Richardson. Vice Chair Clardy, would you like to move House File 58 before the committee for the intention for possible inclusion in the Education Finance Bill?
So moved.
Thank you, Vice Chair Clardy and Representative Richardson. With that, your bill's before us. Go ahead and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. House File 58 builds on bipartisan work that was done to ensure that our preschoolers and early learners experiencing behavioral challenges were met with support before resorting to dismissal. This bill would extend those protections for preschoolers that are currently in statute to students in grades kindergarten through third grade. Minnesota has significant educational disparities. The data shows that Minnesota's educational outcomes and graduation disparities are among the worst in the nation for students of color. A contributing factor to these unacceptable and troubling disparities based on race and disability in school discipline. To be clear, we will never close our student opportunity gap if our students do not have an equal opportunity to be in our classrooms. Furthermore, every student has a right to an education that is free from discrimination. When we hear the statistics from the Minnesota Department of Human Rights and know that 55% of suspensions are based on subjective reasons for things like general disrespect versus objective reasons like assault or possessing a weapon, it shines a light for us to clearly see the discretion and subjectivity that is built into the system leads to troubling statistics like this across our state. Students with disabilities are twice as likely to be expelled or suspended as their non-disabled peers. Nationally, Black students are three times more likely to be expelled or suspended than their white peers, but here in Minnesota, they're eight times more likely to be expelled or suspended than their white peers. Indigenous students are five times more likely to be expelled or suspended than their white peers nationally, but here in Minnesota, they are 10 times more likely to be expelled or suspended than their white peers. This number is even more disturbing, recognizing Indigenous students make up 1.6% of our student population. Looking at the category of ambiguous or subjective reasons for suspensions, Black, Indigenous, and other students of color are almost 80% of the discipline issued by schools for subjective reasons. There is no surprise that we see corresponding disparities in literacy rates, graduation rates. If our kids are not in the classroom at the same rates as other kindergartners through third graders, they are at greater risk for not reaching developmental milestones relating to reading and math literacy. Behind the data are the stories of real students and families that have been impacted. One story heard in previous years education, policy, and finance committees of a young Black student in kindergarten, upset that a teacher had confiscated her chapstick, she ran from the classroom and she was suspended for creating an unsafe environment. In that same school district, another student, an older white male student who caused thousands of dollars of property damage during an outburst where he repeatedly kicked in a door, he was given a timeout. An NPR News story shared the story of a Black second grader who was suspended for poking another student with a pencil. Within that very same classroom, a white second grader threw a rock hitting another student, and then proceeded to break his teacher's glasses. He was not suspended. Last year, in this committee, we also heard the story of a young Black child who was suspended for being in the bathroom for too long. We have a disturbing pattern where students with disabilities are receiving more frequent and harsher punishments than their non-disabled peers. Indigenous students and Black students are receiving more frequent and harsher punishment than their white peers. And the discretion of these choices are where disparities breed and where they grow. Children who experience just one suspension are twice as likely to come into contact with the criminal justice system. A single suspension can change the trajectory of a student's experience. Furthermore, children that are expelled or suspended, they are 10 times more likely to drop out of high school and experience academic failure. We know that behavior is communication, and at some point, all of our young learners are going to need support. As a note, dismissal would not include removal from the classroom. The point of this bill is to create a fairer discipline process and practice where children are not being treated differently based on the color of their skin or their disability status. And with that, Madam Chair, I have a number of testifiers, and I'm not sure if Dr. Johnson is available virtually.
Yes, I'm here.
Thank you, Representative Richardson. Dr. Bernadita Johnson, please state your name for the record and proceed.
Good afternoon, Chair and members. My name is Dr. Bernadita Johnson. I'm a coalition member of Solutions Not Suspensions and the former superintendent of the Minneapolis Public Schools. I want to thank you for the opportunity to share my experience with addressing the discipline disparities that create exclusionary environments for our students in kindergarten to third grade. I lost my notes here. Students who are not in school cannot learn. Students who are pushed out of school lack a sense of belonging. And students who don't learn how to do school cannot develop agency. Therefore, I started with our littlest learners by putting a moratorium on suspending students in pre-K to second grade for nonviolent behaviors. Our state has such gaping discipline disparities for students of color and for students with disabilities. This happens when expectations are clear, consequences don't match the behavior, and when consequences differ based on student demographic. How did I know this? My academic leadership team and I reviewed suspensions for every student to identify what we could do to identify trends and behaviors to allocate resources and target professional development. I often share the example of a kindergarten student who kept putting on lip gloss and creating distraction. She was suspended, she was angry, ran out of school and was suspended for not being safe. I also know the story of the middle school boys who both broke items in the school, one Black and one white. One was suspended, the other one cuddled. Exceptions for one child and punishment for the other. We must have clear and consistent expectations for our students. And more importantly, we must not socialize our children to believe that school is not a place for them. We owe it to our youngest learners to learn, keep them in school and to not send that message from the earliest grades the school is not for them. Thank you for listening to and learning from my experience on youngest learners in schools. And you probably have statements that you want to hear from other folks as well. And I can send this statement to your legislative assistant. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Next up is Adil Abdul. Remote, please state your name for the record and proceed.
One of these days, I'm going to get this tech thing. Dear Madam Chair and members, good afternoon. My name is Aidel Abdul. I am a Somali autism mom and an advocate. First, I would like to thank Representative Richardson for carrying this important legislation and for always being in the corner of students and families. All right, so here we meet again. As you all know, my son, who has autism, nonverbal autism, he communicates using the iPad via the touch chat communication app, was suspended by teacher Kelly Morris and principal Jason Anderson in Bloomington School District on May 3rd, 2018. I'm not going to repeat data and numbers of how students with disabilities are kicked out of their free and appropriate public education. You already know that 2 + 2 = 4. Madam Chair and members, instead today, I want to tell you that I contacted Bloomington School District Superintendent Dr. Eric Melby and asked him if I could speak with the principal who suspended my son, and he agreed. We had a meeting on May 3rd, 2022, 4 years after the suspension. I asked the principal if he thinks my suspending my son had any educational value. He said no. I asked the principal if he had remorse for suspending my son. He said yes. I asked him if he understood, if he thinks my son understood suspension. He said no, and in hindsight, he would not have done it. I reminded him that as a principal of color, because he's Asian American, he bears a huge responsibility to ensure students are treated fairly and not punished unfairly. Additionally, based on data I requested about the principal and the teacher, I found out that they did not have any training on behavior reduction techniques and proactive antecedent strategies, as well as culturally responsive methods. You see, Madam Chair, members, what we need in this education tool is not suspension. It's training, training, and training. It is ensuring that we're setting up the teachers and the principals for success and how to teach children not just science and math, but also how to use non-exclusionary methods and understand the students' needs based, particularly those with special needs. Finally, I want to end with a message that you told me, Madam Chair, years ago when we had coffee at a Hopkins restaurant. You said, give me the House, give me the Senate, give me the governor's house, the governor's office, and we will make leaps and bounds to keep kids in the classroom. Madam Chair, you have that wish today. The ball is in your corner. I would like you to say what you mean what you say, and let's get this legislation off the ground and into the classroom so that children stay in the classroom. Thank you again, as always, for your time.
Thank you. With that, members, we had several people sign up to testify for public testimony. I have Stephanie Stevens and Jessica Webster first up, if you want to come up, and then Nakuya Fayal and Joshua Fuchs on deck. And Stephanie Stevens is remote, so we'll have you go first. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Good afternoon, Chair Joachim and members of the committee. My name is Stephanie Stevens. I'm an early childhood special education teacher with the Centennial School District, testifying today with the Solutions Not Suspensions Coalition. But beyond my job as an educator, my most important job is being a mom. My husband and I became parents to two children in 2019 when we adopted them. And both of my children have had a tumultuous first 2 to 3 years of their lives. They experience homelessness, neglect, food insecurity, drug exposure, and more that I will never be aware of. Even years in a stable home and every therapy that you can think of under the sun does not cure the fact that they both respond with a trauma lens in all situations of their lives. My six-year-old daughter, who attends kindergarten, was recently suspended for non-compliance. And when I asked for the data leading to the grounds for suspension, I was not provided with any. My daughter was suspended not based on concrete evidence or data, not because she was a threat to herself or others, but because my daughter said no and the adult in that classroom decided to lock into a power struggle that day. Suspension that day was used as a reprieve to the frustrations of the adults in the school building and not as a means of preventing this behavior again. I couldn't help but wonder how would things have been different if my daughter's educators had the resources and the option to respond in a restorative, age-appropriate way. A child will behave in whatever way they need to fulfill a need, and they will continue that behavior until their need is met. My daughter responded with a trauma response that day, and she will continue to respond with a trauma response because the suspension does nothing from preventing her behavior from happening again. Suspensions are not fixing our students and their problems. They are simply putting a Band-Aid over the giant gaping wounds of our systems. And it's time that we in the state of Minnesota start treating these wounds for what they are and taking a stand against suspending children under the age of 10 years old. We can't make policy decisions from a place of fear, especially when we're talking about our babies in the classroom. With resource allocation and training, educators and administrators have the opportunity to improve school climate and safety through proven alternatives to exclusion. As a pre-K teacher, I've seen it work in pre-K legislation that's been passed. So let's make it happen for kindergarten through third graders. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Next up, we have Jessica Webster. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Jessica Webster. I use she, her pronouns. I'm a staff attorney with Legal Aid, and I'm also a member of the Solutions Not Suspension Coalition. We definitely support House File 58, and we really want to thank Representative Richardson for all the years that she has worked on this legislation. Today, we're talking about our youngest, littlest learners, as you've heard. They still like hugs from their teachers, stickers, excellent playground equipment. They're in their very first years in a peer community that can be frustrating. Days can be long and hard, and they are working to meet adult expectations. When they fall short, it's often because they haven't developed the skills yet. And they're communicating to us stress, fear, frustration, boredom in the ways that they know how. So at this critical point in the learning process, suspending a child sends a message that school is not for you. The adults here we want you to trust, they can't deal with you. It has devastating consequences for how children view school going forward, and it ruins their relationships with educators. This tool does not work. So today we are so grateful to be in Finance Committee, where we can lift up and fund best practices for kids who are learning these schools, positive support practices that help kids listen, understand the harm they've caused, apologize, new training on de-escalation. Madam Chair, our coalition is standing strongly and respectfully against a number of professional associations that are fighting to hang on to this tool. Minnesota needs to move forward. It's time to let this tool go, much like 16 other states are also letting it go. Let's fund the tools that help kids be successful in school. Thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you so much. Next up, we have Nakua Bayel on remote. I'm not sure if she's there. Are you with us? No, we'll go to Josiah Fuchs, Joshua Fuchs, and then Aaron Sandsmark. Joshua, go ahead, state your name for the record and proceed.
Yeah, good afternoon. My name is Joshua Fuchs. I am the assistant principal at Brooklyn Center Community Schools, and with the bell, I apologize. I am currently working today. Thank you, Chair Yukima, and committee members for taking a moment to listen to everyone today. I just want to build on what Dr. Bernina Johnson was saying as well earlier, that with these pieces of work, we know that K-3 is the foundation of student success. Minnesota has the highest achieving students in the nation, and yet the highest achievement gap in the nation when it comes to our students of color. It's not because we're not capable of educating children. They simply need to be in the classroom to build those foundational skills at the early ages. Things are predictable around literacy and math outcomes when students don't have that opportunity at K-3 because they're missing classroom time and being pulled from those pieces that exist. I'm fortunate to work in a school district that has been working diligently to build toolkits around restorative practices, keeping kids in school, keeping kids in the classroom, repairing harm when it's caused, and having those teachable moments take place when students are showing to us and communicating to us, like others have said so far, that there is not a need that is being met for them. I'm here to advocate particularly for the financial implications around this, and I'm glad to have the opportunity to speak to you all today. We are a district that's also facing a lot of budget cuts this year, and we fund these things out of our budget, and they're not set aside. And so, unfortunately, some of those things and some of the people that support those practices will not be with us next year. And so when I think about the implications of this bill, this is something that all schools need, all school districts need. We need the professional learning to take place. We need people who understand how to do this work and teach this work to be in place for all students, if we're committing to all students in the state of Minnesota. And it needs to be tied to specific funding that's not going to simply go away when things dry up and we have to take away from other areas to either choose this or choose something else. Why are we having to make a choice for our children and the outcomes that they need, particularly our brown and black students and indigenous students in the state of Minnesota? Thank you.
Thank you so much. With that, we will move on to, we have two more testifiers. I was going to see if we have the other person. We just keep looking at the video to make sure the other person doesn't show up. If they do, we'll give them a chance to testify. We have Aaron Sandsmark remote and then Coolio Pringle. Aaron Sandsmark, please state your name for the record and proceed.
Hi. Thank you, committee and Representative Richardson. My name is Aaron Sandsmark, and I'm an organizer with Educators for Excellence Minnesota, and I'm part of the Solutions Not Suspensions Coalition. I'm speaking today in support of House File 58. Every day, I work with educators that are passionate about the well-being of their students. I wanted to share a story from one of the educators that I work with, Kelly Chesnick, a third grade teacher in Apple Valley. A few years ago, Kelly had a student join her class in October. He was quiet at first, but never smiled. One day, he got angry and started acting out. He was yelling and throwing chairs across the room. When he had stopped, she asked a very simple question. Hey, do you feel better? Clearly, this was a response that he had never received, since he looked at Kelly in disbelief. He was absolutely stunned that she wasn't reacting more. She would later come to learn that the response that he expected was for her to yell at him, to kick him out of class or to suspend him. In that moment of looking at his astonished face, she could see how the system had completely failed him. It took another 6 months of consistently showing up with patience, empathy, and a willingness to work through the struggle with him before he started to really trust her. Kelly states, if we as educators choose to punish and suspend children whose sense of reason is not developed, we are depriving them of their right to education. Through Kelly's 13 years of teaching, the students who have predominantly been affected by these punitive policies have been Black boys. How will children ever be able to learn and grow if our move is to suspend them and we deprive them of an education? Kelly's story takes a snapshot of the harm caused by early childhood suspensions, and we encourage you to pass this bill and to protect the psychological safety and educational outcomes for our most vulnerable children. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Next up, we have Kulia Pringle, remote. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Kulia Pringle, and I'm the Minnesota State Director for the National Parents Union, and I'm also a member of the Solutions Not Suspensions Coalition. I'm here to support House File 58 because research shows that removing young children from school and from classrooms can give a long-term negative impact on their relationship with the school. I work one-on-one to support Minnesota families across the state, and I see firsthand and witness firsthand suspensions when it comes to subjective behaviors, especially for Black children. And their story is not my story. The negative effects of exclusionary discipline include poor educational outcomes and increased risk of incarceration. And this could last a lifetime. We also know that there is a disproportionate number of young students of color and students with learning differences that are removed from the classroom. I see up close and personal the devastation that suspensions cause for children who are 5, 6, and 7. And we heard from families during the hearing on this bill in the Education Policy Committee. We heard from mothers of kindergartners who were removed from classrooms for trivial reasons, which undoubtedly had an impact on that student's relationship with schools. We know that the most important factor in early childhood development is having a focused, trusting relationship with an adult, which can't happen if adults are removing kids from classrooms. Thank you for your support of this bill. I hope that Minnesota joins North Carolina, Colorado, Maine, Nevada, California, and so many other states who have realized that excluding kids from classrooms does more harm than good. Thank you.
Thank you so much. With that, I do not see any further testifiers. So we will go to questions and comments from the table. Representative Edelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Richardson, for this bill. It's been 5 years since we've been working on this. Is that right? I want to thank you for your work, and I just want to point that out because you really have led the charge since you've been here on this issue. And as the testifiers have talked about, all the other states. Some of them are red states, some of them are blue states that have passed this. But we're talking about the very limited group that we're talking about here in this bill is kindergarten through grade 3. I just want you guys to think about that for 1 minute here. Kindergarten through grade 3. Those are 5-year-olds to 9-year-olds. And that is the foundational trust that they have within a school in those very early years. When I have big feelings, do teachers show up or do they send me home? When I'm hungry, do teachers make sure and does my school make sure I'm fed or do they send me home? What happens in these times, in these early years, absolutely makes a huge difference. So I just want to thank you for all of your work and I'm looking forward to voting for this and I do hope it passes this year.
Thank you, Representative Edelson. With that, any other further comments or questions? Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I echo Representative Edelson's appreciation for this bill. One of the things that I do when I have students here and take them on the House floor is give them a bill to look at and think about that I think will impact them. The two bills that students have been most interested in and eloquent about have been this bill and then the bill about, I think that's actually your bill, Representative Edelson, about excluding kids from recess. And what we hear fourth and third and fourth graders say is, you know, if you're struggling, if you're acting up, the idea that you will be excluded, that the idea that you'd be sent home, that the idea that you would be sort of withdrawn is actually the exact opposite from what these kids express what they would need. And the empathy and also the understanding of what having access to those, to the adults, to the programs, to what is happening in schools, if you are in a point where you are having discipline issues, is exactly what kids need. And so I really appreciate both the testimony, I appreciate your leadership, and I appreciate that our students actually get this. And they understand how important it is that we pass this bill. And so I'm really grateful that we're doing it today, and I just really appreciate your leadership.
Thank you, Representative Greenman. Representative Bakeberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Richardson, for bringing this bill. There's obviously been a lot of discussion about this bill. There's lots of concerns, but before I jump into that, I would agree with Representative Richardson. We have suspension issues across Minnesota. It's well documented, and it's been well discussed. So I won't take time to talk about that, but the people that are trained, that are qualified, that are licensed know, and I think just all of us as human beings know that behavior is communication. And the more clear we are with our expectations for students, and Dr. Johnson talked about this in her testimony, the more successful students can be. I appreciate that there's allocations for training. I continue to have significant concerns about the tone and tenor of how we talk about educators in this committee. Once again, we had two educators named in this committee for something that happened years ago. I know that I've made many mistakes in my life professionally, personally. I would hope that my name would not be dragged through the mud if I made a mistake. And that's what has happened now twice in education policy and education finance. And we wonder why people are choosing to not go into education. Let's give people grace to learn and grow. So, Representative Richardson, that's why I appreciate some allocation for professional development and training. We've had multiple testifiers at different committees for different bills testify to this. Two of those testifiers were the National Elementary Principal of the Year, one was the Elementary Principal of the Year, and one was the Middle School Principal of the Year at different years. Experts, top of their game in their field. So I guess what I would just ask, are we going to, at this committee level, are we going to listen to advocates? Or are we going to listen to the professionals that know and love and serve our kids every single day? I'm still waiting for the feedback from the department on the listening sessions that were held over our little snow break. There were three different rounds, and I talked about it previously, and I look forward to hearing the feedback from the experts in our field so that we know what they truly think about this. But we don't have that information. It has not been shared from the department yet. So I would encourage you to vote no to this.
Thank you, Representative Bakeberg. As a reminder, we did have teachers testify in support as well, and I also believe they are experts in the field, but I can understand the passion and understand that the conversations have been difficult. They have been ones we've been having for quite a long time around here. We've been working, and I know Representative Richardson's been working very hard on this bill. Representative Santamura?
Yes. Thank you. And I apologize if I walked in just a little bit late. So I want to say that I echo Representative Bakebergen's one point of that I appreciate the grants to schools and school districts for training and professional development as well. My question is there a general thought right now about how much funding will be allocated to that?
Representative Richardson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So this bill is coming back again. Last session, there was $5 million that was allocated within the bill, and that would roughly serve somewhere in the realm between 90 and 95 school districts.
Representative Santamaro.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Richardson, for this bill. And I'm happy to hear that amount. I mean, obviously, there could always be more, but I think that that seems like a substantial support to schools. I worked at a school that, was trying to move to a restorative justice system, and something that our restorative justice coordinator would say is that restorative justice is not a program. And what he meant by that was, you know, and I think anyone who worked in schools has experienced, like, it's not like a one-time thing, right? And it's not something that can be relegated to, like, this is the restorative justice room and restorative justice happens here, or this is the restorative justice moment. Like, it's, I think it's something bigger. It's something about changing, I think, some fundamental ideas that we have about how discipline works and how we actually support people to change their behavior. So I think it's a big shift, right? And I think if we're asking schools to make a big shift, then we need to be providing them with resources. And so thank you for this bill. Thank you for doing this important work. And thank you for ensuring that there's resources to go along with it. I think we need to hold schools accountable to doing things differently. But I think we also need to give them support to do that. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Sensenmura. Representative Altendorf.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Richardson. Just a quick question. Right now we have been having problems as well with literacy in our schools. And has there been any studies shown, that the disciplinary problems are increasing because of kids, just maybe not being as engaged in school or not reading at level, that type of thing? Has there been any type of studies with that?
Representative Richardson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Altendorf, for the question. So, one of the interesting things about the research related to this, when we were doing the work around the preschool suspension ban, what we found is that preschoolers were 3 times more likely to be suspended than kids in K through 12th grade when you looked at that data nationally. And so the way that districts and states collect information is different, so not everyone is collecting things in exactly the same way. But also understanding when we talk about behavior being communication, there are lots of reasons that kids can get dysregulated. And understanding the literacy challenges that we have talked about for many years, at the crux of it, if kids are not in the classroom, they are not going to meet those developmental milestones.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Altendorf.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Richardson. Just a follow-up, and it's actually to you, Madam Chair. Representative Bakeberg brought up that we have testifiers that are calling out. I was told in this committee that is not how we practice our committee. This is not the first time that it's happened. It's on written testimony, so this should have not been a surprise to the committee. And I'm asking right now for our word that we are protecting teachers and principals and not putting them in this type of position. So in this case, this should have been caught. It's in writing. And I feel like this is very wrong for us as a committee to be influencing people and putting this out to the public in this way.
Thank you, Representative Altendorf. We've let a lot of leeway with some of the testifiers that turned in testimony that I probably would have taken out of record on the ethnic studies bill as well. So when people turn in testimony and ask to have it printed, we do. But I will take your comments into consideration. Thank you, Representative Clardy.
Great, thank you. I just wanted to focus back on the bill. Thank you, Representative Richardson, for bringing this bill. What was really encouraging was hearing Bernadia Johnson speak, because she was the superintendent of a very large school district. and she was talking about setting a school climate and culture, and that's what this seems like it's doing. And in just some of my reading, it looked like 55% of suspensions that were done were subjective, and that was whether they're just, you know, maybe a tone or just nothing, just something just subjective. Students need to be in class. If you look at, I know that this bill is geared toward the lower grades, but if you look at the students' achievement rate, like in ninth grade, if they're failing their classes in ninth grade, it's an indicator for them not graduating. So you could take that same principle and look at how it's going to impact their educational success. I teach reading, and I'd like to say that I'm an expert at teaching reading because I've been doing it for 27 years, and I know if my kids are, like, gone or out of the classroom, it's going to tie right into that achievement gap. And if this is something that we're trying to close in Minnesota, this is something that we need to really look at and invest in. And if, again, back to the school culture, if students are being sent out to the class, out of the classroom, I think that these grants would help the schools better analyze their data to make students be successful in their environment. So thank you for bringing this. Do you have any, like, any examples that you can give us of some successes that you've seen already that have been implemented from the previous grant?
Representative Richardson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So unfortunately, the previous grant did not become law. So there are no examples from that. But there are examples of school districts who have taken a compassionate accountability approach to students and have been successful in that regard. And I think we heard from one of the principals earlier, and also thinking about the work that was done in Minneapolis Public Schools. You talked about the fact that 55% of these suspensions are related to very subjective reasons. And when you drill down and you look at the category of reasons for suspensions for Black and Indigenous students and other students of color, almost 80% of those disciplines are for subjective reasons. And that's the rationale for this bill.
Representative Clardy, quick follow-up, and then we're gonna move on.
Real quick. So this isn't a suspension, but I also know that I got a note from my daughter's teacher telling her to keep her beads quiet in her hair. And so instead of the focus, and that's just one example of being a Black child in a school system, but that's just one example that we need to look broader. And it's, you know, it's just one isolated teacher, but it did happen, and it's personal, and it made a difference. So thanks for bringing the bill.
Thank you. Representative Kreisha, final word, and then to the author.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Richardson. Heard this bill a couple times, and as I look at it in this committee, that one of the things that I understand is, and I see items in here, you know, comments about the school to prison pipeline and all that. I understand the passion behind this on both sides. And of course it's subjective. These are humans who are in a situation that can crop up and be incredibly emotional. I don't know at this time, I mean, when I see the frustration of these youth, as you mentioned, Representative Clardy, on the academic achievement side, if you're frustrated in reading and you're frustrated in that and everything seems to be a failure as a student, that can be very difficult. Likewise, a teacher can also have the human events to come. I think that what I'm hearing is, if I were to picture a Venn diagram, we have situations where some expulsions and suspensions were probably unwarranted, and we have some where they should have been warranted, but in the middle, there's probably some that it worked out correctly. The outcome was right. And what I'm hearing is both sides need to work this out before we get involved. I'm hearing both sides. I hear the schools saying, hey, we're aware of this. We're trying to work through it. We're changing the culture. I don't believe that any school's out there trying with a hardline policy to say we're going to make this worse. And they recognize this, and I think we need to let the professionals work through this. I think by you bringing it up, the conversation's great, but we're amplifying both sides as a flashpoint. When we could tone this down, and there is a solution we could get to.
Thank you, Representative Kusha.
I'll leave it at that. I know we have more to move on.
Yes, thank you. And make sure, folks, if you want to get on the list, to like raise your hand sooner and not wait until the very end. Representative Richardson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, members, for the discussion. I want to center a couple of things in closing. The educational opportunity gap has a huge impact on families and on children, and I'm going to get to that. But it also has a huge impact on our economy as well. As part of the House Select Committee on Racial Justice, part of that record was the city report on closing the racial inequality gap. And looking at racism focused on just African Americans over the last 20 years in the United States, there was more than $16 trillion loss to the gross domestic product. And if you drill down to what that means in terms of connections to the educational opportunity gap, it was more than $90 billion. That's what it costs the nation. There are significant costs to the state of Minnesota by not closing these educational opportunity gaps. No one should be satisfied with the outcomes that we currently have within our state. And I want to take a moment to just peel back the layers, because we hear these numbers and it's really easy to get lost in the numbers, but there are real people and there are real families that are impacted by this. And I want to tell the story of my son who was impacted by this when he was in middle school. I got a call from his teacher because he was talking in the classroom. So when he got home that evening, I said, "You can't be talking in the classroom. You need to be paying attention. You got to talk to your friends when you are, on recess or at lunch." And he's like, "I hear you." The next day he went to school and he wasn't talking to his friends. He was focused on his work. And he got sent out of the classroom because he was being quiet. And they were worried about, what is he going to do because he's so quiet today? So he was sent out of the classroom to the principal's office. And I got a call that evening. So the next day I went to school with him and I sat down and I brought a notebook with me and I said, "Tell me, how many words does my son need to say, and when does he need to say them, and what tone and inflection does he need to use? Because what is happening with the way that he's being treated, no matter how he shows up, he's being told he's a problem. If he's talking, he's a problem. If he's quiet, he's a problem." He was in an environment that, regardless of what he did, he wasn't doing it right. And whether that is happening to one child or thousands of children, it shouldn't be happening. And anyone who is saying that it's okay for us to continue to perpetuate these disparities, they're not putting Minnesota first. They're not putting students first. They're not putting teachers first. They're not putting superintendents or principals first. I've been fighting for this bill for 5 years now. And to say that kids don't have a right to an education is ludicrous at this point. So with that, Madam Chair, I will end it there. There is a better way. And there is information that is out there. There is support, there is training. We don't have to continue to live with these disparities that are not accidents, but they're the results of systems working just the way that they were designed.
Thank you, Representative Richardson. And with that, thank you so much for your work on this. House File 58 is laid over for a possible inclusion in the Education Finance Bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Members, next up, we have House File 2925, Representative Kozlowski. And Representative Jordan, would you like to move House File 2925 before the committee with the intention to lay it over for possible inclusion in an education finance bill?
Madam Chair, I move that House File 2925 be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill.
Thank you. And Representative Jordan, would you like to move the A2 amendment?
Yes, Madam Chair. The A2 amendment is a technical amendment that gives some staff costs to MBE to assist districts with their gender-neutral bathroom proposals, and so I don't know, Representative Kozlowski, if you have anything to add to it, but I do move the A2 amendment.
Thank you, Representative Kozlowski. Welcome to the House Education Finance Committee. Would you like to say anything about the A2 amendment before we adopt it?
Yes, thank you, Chair Joachim, and I also want to just give a shout out to Representative Jordan and both of you for being with me every step of the way in this bill. I just wanted to add that, you know, in conversations with various folks for whom this bill would impact and positively benefit their lives, you know, that's the disabilities community, that's LGBTQ folks, that's multicultural folks, that's families, a whole swath of folks, and we are moving to really make sure that school districts have the tools and the capacity needed to implement this bill in a good way as we pilot and move this forward. I also just wanted to add that as we are continuing to have conversations about how can we really strengthen and braid together, we know disabilities, justice, and inclusion are the same thing, same fight. We will be continuing to work on the ADA and beyond accessibility language, as well as looking at, right now the bill states single user, you know, some school districts are wanting to do multi-user general neutral restrooms as tailored to school districts. So just wanted to flag that we are going to continue conversations that is not reflected in this amendment that will come forward.
Thank you, Representative Kozlowski. With that, any questions on the A2 amendment? Representative
Prisha. Just so I heard, Representative Clark, so did you say there's going to be other changes and other amendments coming?
Representative Kozlowski.
Thank you, Chair Joachim, and Representative. Yeah, if possible within the language, we are looking at how might we be able to strengthen some of the ADA accessibility and available uses through the bill. But we want to make sure that we create something that works for all users. So if possible, yes, we're going to continue to have conversations, though.
Representative Prisha.
Madam Chair, thank you. I would just say, if we're going to do that, and there's going to be substantive changes, just to let you know, I would ask that the bill would come back before us then.
Mm-hmm. Representative Grisha, this is our last day of bill hearings. And
understood.
With all other bills that we've worked on in committee, we leave it open to make sure we get peace in the valley and folks are happy. Mm-hmm. So that's how we're going to move forward. With that, all those in favor of the A2 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. The A2 amendment's adopted. With that, Representative Kozlowski, go ahead and present your bill.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you again for the opportunity here, House File 2925. This bill is coming forward for us to be able to really advance safe and supportive and welcoming schools, which we know play a really pivotal role for ensuring that our students are engaged in learning and that nothing hinders their ability to best learn and succeed in the classroom. And we know that students in Minnesota really deserve, as well as the law directs, that students have access to appropriate bathroom and locker room facilities in every school in the state. And so we know that the availability of inclusive and affirming spaces at schools also makes students overall feel safer, thus allowing them to spend their energy on being present and learning. And passing this bill would be a clear message from the state that our schools are a place where all students are included, no matter what, and that they have the right to that safety and belonging. But we also know that within the school settings that school officials and leaders and students and families are working really, really hard in every pocket of the state to ensure that students and communities do have access and on many different realms, from access to locker rooms to fully participate in classes, educational and cultural purposes and beyond. And we're really proud that Minnesota students are guaranteed access to these facilities that align with, you know, their gender identity. We also know that shared single-gendered facilities are not fully meeting the needs of our state's diverse populations in the 200 schools across the state. And so we are seeking to ensure access to private and gender-neutral facilities, which are a tremendous value add, and also make for a more convenient wide range of offering for student populations. And I also want to shout out that you'll hear today from some testifiers for whom you know, really moved me to carry this bill, and that's the youth in the schools who took on the emotionally exhausting task of recounting their experiences of being bullied in bathrooms to school leaders, educators, and parents coming together to find a better way. And so there are many ways in which this bill would destigmatize as well as support students and that is good for LGBTQ students, students who have accessibility needs that will better meet their needs with these facilities, students with physical disabilities of caretakers of a different gender, families with small children, and the list goes on and on. And so making these really important investments would enable our school districts to remodel or reconstruct inclusive facilities and make sure that students in Minnesota know that they belong. So I would like to turn it now over, Chair Joachim, to our amazing list of testifiers.
Thank you, Representative Kozlowski. With that, we have Dallon Smith. And, oh, we have a pre-recorded video first. Dallon Smith, hit play. And it's happening now.
Greetings, members of Congress. My name is Dallon Smith, and I serve the students of Roseville and its surrounding communities as the Director of Equity and Innovation for Roseville Area Schools. I'm here today to testify about the Gender Neutral Schools Facilities Bill. A little over 2 years ago, I enjoyed the privilege of being the principal of Harambe Elementary School in Roseville. During the 2020-2021 school year, two of my kindergartners challenged me to live within my values of loving all kids no matter how they show up and allowing them to be their authentic selves. To protect my students, I will call them Michael and Hector. And to help paint this picture, they're presented as two little boys. Michael wore pink snow pants and winter coat to recess every day. And Hector wore a dress to school from day one. But this was not a fad. Both students were confident in who they were. Toward the end of the school year, I got a request from Michael and Hector's parents that they be allowed to use the girls' bathroom, the gender they identified with. Two thoughts immediately came to mind. Was my school ready for this? And how would my girls respond seeing these boys in their bathroom? My initial response was to allow Michael and Hector to use the girls' bathroom with an adult escort, someone who could explain to students why these two were using the girls' bathroom. This did not last long, as Michael and Hector's parents informed me that my good intentions were singling out and alienating the very students who I swore to love and allow to show up as their authentic selves. So, I tore the Band-Aid off, realized my students were ready for this, and allowed Michael and Hector to use the girls' bathroom without reservation. Trans students need to have the choice to use whichever bathroom feels most comfortable for them, and the Gender Neutral Schools Facilities Bill, which would fund gender neutral facilities, should not be used to regulate trans kids to using only those facilities. I ask that you learn from my lesson and allow trans kids to use the facilities they are comfortable with. That's how we love them no matter how they show up and allow them to be their authentic selves. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. We will follow up with the link for the testimony because I know it was really hard to hear, but also when I've been watching other hearings that have remote testimony and sometimes it comes up better when it's recorded as well, but we will follow up with the link so folks can hear that. Next up, we have Jupiter Stowski remote. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Hello, I'm Jupiter Stowski from Duluth. I attend Duluth Public Schools. I'm here to express my support of House File 2925, Gender Inclusive School Facilities. This bill will provide gender-neutral facilities for disabled, transgender, non-binary, and other students. In addition, it will provide funding to help schools pay for them, which is a huge barrier. Thank you for making time for students to testify today. Of the three gender-neutral bathrooms that we have at my very large school, one is reserved for teachers and one is in the nurse's office, which many kids have anxiety when using. This leaves only one gender-neutral bathroom. Unfortunately, it is tucked away in a corner on the first floor, which leads to many kids who need to use the gender-neutral bathroom to drastically limiting their water intake all day, which is not healthy and causes dehydration. In my school, we are fortunate to have one family locker room, which is accessible to all genders as well as students with disabilities. But that does not mean that everything is perfect. With only 10 lockers and two changing spaces, it is incredibly small and for a large school. With only two changing spaces, I often have to wait an extremely long time for others to change. Adding more gender-neutral locker rooms would be beneficial for both disabled and transgendered students. Every day, I also experience mental strain that goes along with having to choose between a male or a female bathroom. Though I would like to use the bathroom that correctly aligns with my gender identity, the male bathroom is simply not safe for people like me. There's a good chance I would get harassed or physically hurt in that bathroom. And not only do I get dirty looks when I go into the female bathroom, but it causes me to be on the verge of a mental breakdown due to gender dysphoria. Gender-neutral facilities are an equity issue and are critical for the mental and physical health of a wide range of students. Please support House File 292.
Next up, we have Kelly, Juniper Kelly Swing. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Juniper Kelly Swing. My pronouns are they, them, and I am a junior at Duluth East High School and the president of my Gender Sexuality Alliance. I'm testifying today on behalf of queer students across the state on the importance of gender-neutral bathrooms in schools. The first thing that gender-neutral bathrooms do are create a judgment-free space for students where they do not feel forced to attend bathrooms that do not correctly align with their gender identity, and they are given recognition from the school. When we give students the opportunity to use bathrooms that they feel safe in, that they feel free from harassment or judgment from other students, they feel safer in school. They feel as if their identities are recognized by the district, by their teachers, by their principal, and by their peers. In addition, as Jupiter mentioned before me, students have health impacts when they do not feel safe to use bathrooms in schools. Students who end up dehydrated from lack of water intake because they feel they are not welcome in bathrooms. Students who end up with urinary tract infections from feeling they are unsafe. In addition, it's mentally draining to feel like you are not accepted in school, like you do not belong. And so many of our students in my school, my friends, feel this way. May I remind you that over 20% of my generation identifies as LGBTQIA. That is one in five students in middle schools, in high schools, in college. Young adults are not feeling like they have the ability to use bathrooms in our school when we do not give them the opportunity to feel accepted, to feel safe. Students are not the problem here. Having queer students is not the fault of them. Our schools need to show them that they belong. Our district needs to show them that they belong by giving them the opportunity to use gender-neutral spaces. We need to show students that they are just as important as their cisgendered peers. Thank you for listening to me today, and please vote for this bill.
Thank you. Next up, I have John Magus. I don't know if he's here. Oh, he is here remote. Perfect. Not remote. In person, present. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much. Why don't you go ahead and state your name for the record, Superintendent, and proceed.
Sure. My name is John Magus, and I'm Superintendent of Duluth Public Schools. Hello, Chair Yukim and committee members. Thank you again for allowing me to speak on this very important issue today. I'm speaking on behalf of myself as Superintendent of Duluth Public Schools, but I'm also speaking on behalf of the Association of Metropolitan School Districts. I'm here to testify in support of House File 2925 for gender-inclusive school facilities. As with many districts throughout the state, the vision of Duluth Public Schools is to respect all students' gender identity and gender expression by honoring the rights of students to be identified and addressed by the preferred name and pronoun. The students and staff of Duluth Public Schools deserve respectful and inclusive learning environments that value student gender identity and gender expression. In our district, we ensure that all students have access to programming and facilities in which they feel comfortable, supported, and safe. Minnesota law and case study law states that students shall have access to restrooms that correspond to their gender identity asserted at school. Yet the cost to these bathrooms, to building those facilities, and really thinking about the safety of all students and the perspective of all students is very, very high. Looking at our schools, looking at what it would cost per school, it's about $400,000 to truly address this. That would be a total of approximately $6 million for Duluth Public Schools alone. But we make do for now. We convert single-use restrooms and have other partial fixes. But this can create other safety issues, as you heard from some of our student testifiers. Sometimes it's a location for vaping or other undesirable types of activities. So we want to make sure that we are providing safe facilities for all. By approving this bill, it will give schools an opportunity to apply for much-needed funding to make these changes and increase the privacy, regardless of students' gender identity or expression, and regardless of the underlying reasons for the students' need or desire for increased privacy. Not only are these types of open, inclusive bathrooms beneficial for student safety by preventing bullying, it will also cut down on costs for districts as vandalism of restroom facilities become more frequently due to social media and other trends. I also support the amendment that Representative Kozlowski has added that ensures training, resource capacity development, and implementation for those receiving those grants. It's important that we're all learning. We are all learning how we're going to improve how we address state and federal mandates thoughtfully and respectfully. Staff training on inclusivity will be an important aspect of successful changes in practice. In the frequently quoted words of Maya Angelou, do the best until you can know to do better. And then when you know how to do better, do better. We know how to do better now regarding gender-inclusive bathrooms, and we appreciate the consideration for additional funding and training to support it. So now that we know better, let's do better by supporting this important bill.
Thank you, Superintendent. Next up, we have Xander Danielson-Zelli, and then we'll move to public testimony. State your name for the record and proceed.
Hello, my name is Xander Danielson-Selly, and I'm here to tell you that I support House File 2925 because of a few different reasons. One, as a non-binary person, two, as a person that works in schools, as a para who works with disabled kids. In the time I've worked in schools, I've worked in three different districts, two of them with physically disabled kids. And last year, my student was in a large high school and only had one bathroom they could use, and it required us to clear out the nurse's area to sit down because of the power chair they were in. Some of these are quite large, and they lower all the way to the ground. So he had one bathroom he could use in the entire school. And bathrooms are very costly to renovate, because once you start dealing with plumbing, you have to deal with code and ADA, and most things haven't been updated. So we would frequently ask if there was a way we could get a different bathroom, and the answer was, there isn't a funding stream to make it happen. And then currently the way we treat many groups around bathrooms is awful. My student was frequently out because he would not use the bathroom because it would be far away from the classroom we were in. And sometimes his power chair would have a limited charge, leading him to have other health issues as well. So, yeah.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Next up, we'll move to public testimony. We have Tamara Grady and Hannah Edwards with Beatrice Meadows and Hannah Carlson on deck. Go ahead and state your name for the record and proceed.
Hello, thank you, Chair Joachim and committee members for your time today. My name is Tamara Grady. My pronouns are she, her, hers, and I am an Osseo School Board member. HF 2925 appropriates money for gender-neutral single-user restroom and locker room facilities in public schools. This bill is based on a resolution that I passed through the Minnesota School Board Association Delegate Assembly in 2021. It is written to support compliance with an NH versus Anoka-Hennepin Schools court decision. In this precedent-setting case, a student filed a charge of discrimination because he was not allowed to use a locker room that matched his gender identity. Just to remind folks, gender identity is the innate sense and deeply held understanding one has of their gender, which may or may not correspond to the sex assigned at birth. Some children have a strong sense of their gender identity as early as 3 years old. This includes children who identify as gender expansive, non-binary, and transgender. This resolution is important to me because I am a proud parent of a child who is transgender and a child who is non-binary. And when children like mine are not allowed to live their daily lives, which includes using the restroom and locker room in ways that align with their gender identity, they suffer socially, emotionally, and academically. The experience of rejection, isolation, loneliness, and bullying leads to over half of all transgender and non-binary students seriously considering suicide. That's why I urge you to support appropriating funding for gender-neutral, single-user restroom and locker room facilities in public schools. These investments allow for more privacy and choice for everyone, because the best way to not single out a legally protected class is to give everyone the same access. Thank you very much for your time, and thank you for supporting this bill.
Thank you. Next up, we have Beatrice Meadows.
Yes.
And I'm sorry, and then we'll go to Hannah Edwards afterwards. Sorry. Not enough sleep this morning. Go ahead and state your name for the record and proceed.
My name is Beatrice Meadows, and my pronouns are they, them. Chair Joaquim and members of the Education Finance Committee, I am a retired public school teacher with over 15 years of experience working with queer youth. I am currently a human rights student and a transgender rights advocate, and it is in all three of these capacities that I come before you to speak on behalf of HF2925. First, I want to share with you a story of one of my former students that hopefully illustrates for you the shame and stigma so many trans youth experience in attempting to participate in PE without formal gender-neutral changing spaces. I discovered in talking with my student one day last year that they were getting graded down in PE because they were not dressing down for class. As I pushed into why this was happening for them, I was mindful of my students' gender identity. As a trans masculine person, they were likely engaging in chest binding, the practice of pressing down breast tissue with the hopes of having the appearance of a flatter chest. While a very helpful practice for addressing feelings of gender dysphoria, a common feeling for trans masculine teenagers who do not want breasts, it was not such a helpful practice when it came to dressing down for PE, a place where they felt on display. As it turned out, this was exactly what was going on for them. The prospect of having to dress down in the girls' locker room on a daily basis was weighing on them, causing them to simply skip the step altogether and just accept a lower grade. Unfortunately, the school I was teaching in did not have much in the way of gender-neutral changing facilities, something that I know would greatly encourage this student in feeling like they were able to have the privacy they needed while also being able to participate in class. This is just one of many potential examples of how HF2925 can positively impact the mental health of trans, non-binary, gender non-conforming, and genderqueer students across Minnesota. The provision of appropriate privacy measures is essential to mitigating the harmful effects gender dysphoria has on our trans teens and shows them we are in solidarity with them and their needs, building the community of support we know trans teens need to thrive. To close, please help queer and genderqueer Minnesota K-12 students receive full and equal enjoyment of their public accommodations. Pass HF2925.
Thank you. Next up, we have Hannah Edwards, and then we'll go to Hannah Carlson. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Good afternoon, representatives. Thank you for having me here. My name is Hannah Edwards, and my pronouns are she, her. Thank you, Representative Kozlowski, for bringing this bill forward and leading this work. It's really important and meaningful to my family personally, so I appreciate that. I'm here today because I am the parent of an amazing 12-year-old transgender girl. I am also currently serving as the director of Transforming Families Minnesota. We're the state's largest and longest-running support network for trans youth and their caregivers. We run 4 monthly support meetings where our 800-plus members can come and get support and share resources. In my experience as a former art teacher in public schools and the mother of a trans girl and the director of Transforming Families, I've seen the need for gender-neutral facilities many, many times, time and time again. At school, as a teacher, I've seen students who hold their bathroom needs all day, leading to bathroom accidents and urinary tract infections. These trans and non-binary students deserve to not have the need to use the bathroom interfere with their ability to learn. More access to gender-neutral facilities would help these students. It would also help cisgender students who are needing access to facilities like this for a whole host of other reasons. As the director of Transforming Families, one of the largest requests that we see for support is around the issue of access to facilities for students. The parents who reach out to us are often asking how to find a way for their trans or non-binary kiddos to access a more private place to change and get ready for PE, or in order to participate on the teams that they're on. As the mother of a trans child, I've directly seen the result and relief of happiness when my trans child was afforded access along with her peers, not separate from them, to a gender-neutral bathroom. When my daughter was in kindergarten, we faced a pretty large-scale public battle with her public charter school, Nova Classical Academy, which we won, over her need to transition, which included her access to facilities. When she moved to St. Paul Public Schools, her relief at the access to single-stall, gender-neutral bathrooms was palpable. St. Paul Public Schools has committed to updating their facilities to include gender-neutral facilities with all of their new remodeling, and she was 8 when she was interviewed for an equity video that St. Paul Public Schools made, and when asked something that made a huge difference to her in her life that made her feel like things were more equitable, in her innocent voice, she answered, and I quote, "They don't have boy or girl bathrooms at my school. They just have bathrooms for everybody." This sense of relief is something that every Minnesota child deserves to feel. This bill would ensure that we are not just paying lip service to trans and non-binary students, but that we are proactively taking steps that will positively affect their educational experiences and give them the equal opportunity at a fair education without the barrier of where they will access facilities getting in the way of their learning. Thank you.
Thank you. And then with that, with the final testifier is Hannah Carlson on remote. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Chair Joachim, members of the committee, thanks so much for having me here. I'm so grateful for this opportunity to speak, and to Representative Kozlowski, I'm very appreciative of your work in authoring this bill. My name is Hannah Carlson, and I have served as a school counselor in Greater Minnesota for the past 5 years. I'm here to talk about the immediate importance of ensuring that every school in our state has a gender-neutral bathroom. In Minnesota, we want every single one of our students to feel welcome and supported in our schools. We want kids to love coming to school, to feel safe and a sense of belonging when they walk through the front doors and into a building where many spend upwards of 40 to 60 hours a week, if not more. Not having a gender-neutral restroom is both an accessibility issue for our students with disabilities and a safety and belonging issue for our LGBTQ plus students. My job is to support the mental health, well-being, academic, and future success of our students. At any moment during the school day, I could have any one of my 520 students in my office. Where I spend most of my working days is often the hub for the students in my school. They all come to ask about academics, work on group projects, plan for life after high school, laugh, cry, vent, giggle about their crush, and so much more. I hope that my students feel a sense of security when they are with me and in the space that I have control of. However, there have been many times where I have students who speak to me about the spaces in school that I don't have control of, where they do not feel a sense of belonging and security, and sometimes those spaces that are spoken of are the bathrooms. Students deserve the option to use a bathroom where they feel they can go into at any time without caution or unease. Transgender, non-binary, and gender non-conforming students may feel more comfortable using a restroom that is not gendered and may experience less harassment or discrimination as a result. Gender-neutral restrooms can also promote safety for students who may be at risk in gendered restrooms. Kids cannot learn to their highest level when their basic needs aren't met. And this is perhaps one of the most basic of needs, a comfortable restroom to use. This can lead to bathroom avoidance or school avoidance altogether. Our students should never feel the need to hold it. A gender-neutral restroom is a sensible, accessible, and extremely important option to have in every school. For the well-being of some of our most vulnerable children, I ask you all to support House File 2925 today. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. And of course, my 4 hours of sleep isn't working, and I forgot somebody that was on the testifier list. We have Dr. Gepford here. Go ahead and state your full name for the record and proceed.
Thank you. My 2 hours of sleep isn't working very well either, so I think we're all feeling the pain this morning, this afternoon. All right. Thank you. My name is Dr. Angela Cade Gepford. I'm a pediatrician at Children's Minnesota, where I serve as the chief education officer and medical director of the gender health program. I've been taking care of kids in the state of Minnesota for the last 17 years, and I'm happy to testify today on behalf of Children's Minnesota for House File 2925. I'm fundamentally here because every child should have the right to safely access the restroom at school. Ideally, students should have access to the restroom and locker room that corresponds to their affirmed gender identity. However, a private single-stall restroom may also be necessary to protect the privacy, safety, and create appropriate accommodations for transgender, non-binary, and gender-diverse students. I'm going to tell you more about the safety of trans and gender diverse students, but before I do that, I do want to add that I have been a pediatrician in this state for 17 years, taking care of all kids, and having single stall restrooms benefits all children. So before you dismissively think this is only about trans and gender diverse kids, at Children's Minnesota, we take care of a lot of kids who have G-tubes, gastrostomy bags, they self-catheterize at school, they may have diabetes devices that they're wearing during school, and they don't want other kids to see those. So they don't want to be in the locker room where other kids see those. They don't want to be in the restroom where someone's seeing them empty their gastrostomy bag or self-catheterize. So they also need access to these bathrooms. And even my own 5-year-old son, when he started kindergarten, he's a healthy 5-year-old kid. Someone looked under the stall when he was in the gendered bathroom, and it really freaked him out. And he soiled himself for the next several months to avoid using the bathroom at school. And had he at 5 just had a bathroom he could go in while he adjusted to doing that at school, it would have benefited him too. So this is about all kids, not just trans and gender diverse kids. That being said, gender segregated restrooms and facilities are sources of anxiety and fear for trans and gender diverse kids. And as a result, as you've heard, many go out of their way to avoid using the bathroom. Every day, 85% of trans and gender diverse students are harassed in schools, and due to this, 80% of trans students feel unsafe or uncomfortable using gendered bathrooms at school. 63.4% of them avoid using the bathroom at all when they are in school. I've heard from students who avoid eating and drinking at school so they don't have to use the restroom during the day. I've heard from gender diverse kids as young as 5 years old about their inability to use the bathroom at school without mean comments from peers and scrutiny from both peers and teachers. I had a 4.5-year-old trans girl who was scolded by her teacher for throwing her, after she went to the bathroom and washed her hands, she took the tissue and put it in the girl's waste paper basket, and her teacher wanted it to put it in the boys' waste paper basket of the stalls that were in the school. So there's a lot of pressure on kids in schools relative to bathrooms. I've also attended to injuries from a transgender 13-year-old who was physically assaulted in their school's bathroom by peers. 70% of trans students are verbally harassed by peers in the restroom. 9% are physically assaulted in the restroom. In addition to the mental health consequences of stress, anxiety, and poor school performance that these incidents cause, as you can imagine, students who avoid using the restroom can have serious medical consequences. These have been shown to be recurrent urinary tract infections, constipation, as well as more serious health complications like blood in the urine called hematuria, and chronic kidney disease or scarring. Transgender adults are more likely to have chronic kidney scarring than other adults from their avoidance of public restrooms. Gender-neutral restrooms are an essential part of creating an inclusive school environment. This bill is a vital step to ensuring that every student can access what they need to have their basic needs met during the school day so that they can be fully present and ready to learn alongside their peers. Thank you, Representative Kozlowski, for your continued advocacy and leadership on this bill, and appreciate the time.
Thank you, Dr. Gepford. With that, members, we'll go to the table for questions or comments. Representative Sensenbrenner.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Kozlowski and Representative Jordan for bringing this important bill. he's not in the room right now, but I'm going to go to my favorite phrase that Lead Creshaw gave me earlier this year of biological dignity. So I think that's what this bill is about. I know there's been some conversations, I think, on this committee about, you know, why have we had multiple bills this year in the Education Finance Committee that have to do with student bathrooms. And I think it's that, right? We currently, the way our school is set up, we don't have a foundation where every young person has biological dignity, whether it's access to the bathroom they need, whether it's access to the healthcare that they need at school, whether it's access to the food they need at school. And so I know that, you know, I sometimes hear from the other side of the aisle, like, why are we talking about this when we have the literacy rates that we do? And I think we can do both, and we need to do both. Having biological dignity is the foundation to everything else. That's why a doctor was here today speaking to the importance of it. And I really appreciate the comments from the superintendent about, you know, when you know better, you do better. And many of us went to schools that didn't have this kind of access. But we know that people, young people that went to those schools were hurt. And now we know better, and now we can do better. And this bill will give schools the funds to do better. You know, again, it's that accountability for schools, but also the support. We know that it takes funds. We know that it takes investment. We know that it takes training to do this. And I just want to end with saying, for the doctor, for the advocates, for you, Representative, it's a lot to do this bill after last night on very little sleep. I feel like all of our biological dignity is kind of rocky right now. But it's really important, as we welcome more trans families to Minnesota, we need to make sure that this is a safe place for them. We need to make sure that our schools are ready to welcome them. And this bill will get us one step closer to doing that. So thank you.
Thank you. Representative Baker.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative. Coming down here, getting prepared, looking at this bill, I honestly think it makes a lot of sense, looking at the underlying bill. And just reading, this is a bill, an act for relating to education finance, providing gender-neutral single-user restrooms and locker room facilities. And the part I really like is appropriating money, like, so we're going to actually pay for it. And I would echo what the doctor said about this is about all kids. And, you know, there was a time when, you know, those of us that are a little bit older, we'd have phi ed class and we would go into a mass shower and shower. That's just not the day we're living in today. And kids are and gave good examples of pumps and different medical pieces that kids are conscious of. So we need to be aware of that. So coming down, I think it makes sense. This underlying bill made sense. And then the amendment, I just have questions about it. I question, you know, the need for more money for MDE. And I just, if nonpartisan staff, if you could walk through the fiscal note just to help understand that for us, because just to give you some context and background, a school in my district just walked through this recently, and they worked with their facility director, they worked with their engineer, and they were able to do this and create gender-neutral bathrooms. So I'm just wondering the need, and maybe it gets into that local control piece, but need at MD.
Maybe we'll first go to walk through the fiscal note, but for the amendment, I'll go to the author. So first, just Ms. Helvig, Beckel, if you can walk through that. Well, we don't have a fiscal note, so I'll have. Oh, yeah, we do. Ms. Beckel, sorry.
Madam Chair and members, Solveig Beckel, House Fiscal. There is a fiscal note, but I am just going to pass it over to Mr. Strom to explain the situation.
Yes, Mr. Strom. I just was reminded of the situation.
Madam Chair, committee members, I apologize. There's confusion between the House and the agency regarding the fiscal note. The House's author's intent, as was expressed, was this revenue would be on top of the existing LTFM revenue. So it would have a cost to it. It would be on top of that revenue. And the language has been submitted a couple of different ways, and both times there still seems to be a bit of misunderstanding. So the hope is the fiscal note that's there that's not helpful is going to be replaced with one that does show the cost. But we're still in a bit of a loop in trying to get the author's intent clarified with the MDE staff, who, you know, do marvelous work, but we're just having a communication issue that I think probably relates to the way I wrote that sentence. But we're trying to get that clarified so that the cost can be identified on top of the existing per pupil long-term facilities maintenance revenue amount.
Representative Baker, follow-up.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Strom. Always excellent work from you. So just to clarify, MDE is the $75,000, and we're unsure at this point for schools.
Mr. Strom?
Madam Chair, Representative Baker, that's exactly right, yes. And the one other note, just for the committee's sake on this, the cost would come back as a levy increase, but the intent of the committee would be to stick to the zero levy target, so another aid and levy would be adjusted. So whatever that cost is identified as, whether it's identified as aid or levy, would be entirely an aid cost for the purposes of this committee.
Representative Jordan, you had your hand up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And part of this is also, we don't do unfunded mandates for schools. We shouldn't do unfunded mandates for MDE. Not every district is very large, and many of them do rely on MDE and regional centers for that technical assistance and guidance. So this $75K would be on top of appropriations for the actual constructions into the long-term facilities maintenance. And so the funding in this bill would be the planning, the assistance from MDE, and then construction. And so while the fiscal note is still being worked out, it is a scalable ask as well. As we're putting together our omnibus bill, I think it's important that we keep that in mind. Obviously, the more money there is, the more schools we can support. But we would like to support as many schools as possible. I think we're thinking that if we had 5 to 10
million,
we would get about 50 to 100 schools as well. So, and it's important to remember that this isn't a mandate for new construction. This is about when there is new or substantially remodeling. This isn't just saying we need to have X number of gender neutral facilities per students or per staff. And I do know that we do have Mr. Uni here from MDE if people want to go into specifics about the agency assistance.
Let's see if Representative Bakeberg has follow-up. Mm-hmm. It looks like we're good. With that, we've got Representative Clardy is last on our list.
Great bill. If we always focus on the kids being the center of the school and success, it makes a difference. With my former school board hat on, I was really excited that Minnesota School Board Association brought a representative here, because that clearly indicates the need and the conversations that have taken place in school districts statewide for this. It not only affects the, you know, gender neutral bathrooms, but also, you know, the accessibility for students. And then one other thing I wanted to say is that I work in St. Paul Public Schools, not a plug, okay, but I work there, and we have gender-neutral bathrooms, and they're working out beautifully. There aren't lines, you know, and just everyone seems really happy with it. So thanks for bringing a bill here that makes sense and, you know, with the ability to apply for a grant. Thank you.
Thank you. And with that, Representative Kozlowski, final comments.
All right. Chair Joachim and committee, again, thank you for a great conversation. And, the reason why bringing this bill forward and why it's so important is that as we navigate systems that weren't designed for students, that weren't designed for gender expansive students, for students with disabilities, but even just as was mentioned, you know, the mass showers, I growing up, as a student, as a non-binary student, didn't know at the time that I really could have benefited and had a better experience, as we've heard story after story, with the option and the choice and the empowerment. As we heard from students talking about having a judgment-free space to choose and have that power in their own hands to determine what safety looks like for them, and to have that recognition. Students aren't the problem, as we heard, and right now, this is an opportunity for us to be invest in a solution with school boards, superintendents, families, and communities. And so ask for your support in bringing this forward, and have a really real impact on our communities and our students' futures. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Representative Kozlowski, and thank you and Representative Jordan for all your work on this bill and all the advocates, especially the students. As Representative Vice Chair Clardy said, as long as we center students in this work, I think we're on the right track. So with that, members, I'll lay over House File 2925 as amended for possible inclusion in the education finance bill. Next up, we have Representative Norris, who's hiding over there. I'm glad he's here. All right, as people are clearing out, we have House File 2492 before us. Up next, I will move House File 2492 before the committee. And Representative Norris, welcome back to the Education Finance Committee. Your bill is before us. Would you like to go ahead and present?
Thank you, Chair Joachim and members. Summoning my final reserves of energy here on a Friday afternoon to bring before you a bill that I see as a triple win. It reduces homelessness, it builds construction skills among our students, and it promotes home ownership. This bill, House File 2492, would allow schools to tap into funding to create or expand programs in which young people learn construction skills as they build homes or rehab apartments for low-income youth and families. It would allow for significant increases in funding for youth build programs in which 18 to 24-year-old opportunity youth learn construction skills as they construct homes or rehab apartments for low-income people and or people experiencing homelessness. And it really allows our students to also learn those construction skills. We hear about the fact that there's a shortage of people going into the construction trades. This is a great way to make sure that we're introducing our young people to all the different trades that go into creating a house and then getting them to build some of those introductory skills that then hopefully they'll use to go on into apprenticeship programs and ultimately a long and successful career in the trades. We also, in your packets, members, you should have a number of letters of support. Letters of support from public school leaders, including two different intermediate districts and a charter public school, a statewide association of career and technical education leaders, amongst others. And so this is something that I see as a common sense proposal. It, like I said, really checks a lot of different boxes for us in terms of our policy objectives, and we've got some testifiers who can talk more specifically about the program and their experiences and the impact it would have throughout our state.
Thank you. We have two testifiers today. I've got Kalik Rogers and Jill Stewart Keller. Go ahead and state your name for the record and proceed.
Good afternoon, Chair and Committee. My name is Kalik Rogers of Good Riddance Consulting and also the co-director of Center for School Change. I'm here to just amplify the need for this program, not just the program, but the access to this grant fund. Because just going back on my story, I'm from Chicago initially, and my parents wanted to take a leap of faith of moving here to Minnesota because there were many different opportunities for housing programs and things of that nature that will help my family have just a better opportunity to come from surviving to thriving. And when we actually got here, you know, the opportunities were slightly greater than what were in Chicago, but they were still very limited, including housing. And through that experience, my family was looking for housing for quite some time when they got here, but there was a very competitive market. Just as there's a housing shortage now, there was a housing shortage then. And that actually led my family to have to split due to not having enough money to after application to application and ran out of resources. And they had to go into a family shelter. But at that time, the family shelters were predominantly single parents. So my father couldn't come, and that ended up splitting the family. Those are moments for me that I always remembered, and I also just remember how it felt not to have resources or access to resources, or if they are there, they may not get heard, or you may not know that they even exist. So for me, growing up, I tried my best to go into whatever program I could to make sure I alleviated any pressure or strain from my mother. And for me, I went into IT internships within Genesis Works, the YWCA Impact Program. I've even tried trade programs as well. And for me, those opportunities were not greatly amplified within the schools. I was one of the few pioneers. I even did PSEO, and I was the first student at my alternative high school at Gordon Parks, where I graduated, to take a part of that program. And ended up being something that changed my perspective and really gave me a more broad vision of possibilities for my life. And I believe that opportunities like this, where we can bring trades to schools again, will give youth the opportunity to expand their vision of possibilities, to go from surviving to thriving by having their own set of skills where they can go out into the world and provide for themselves and change their generation, you know, and change the fabric of how their family can support themselves. So I just want to thank you for this time, and please support this bill.
Thank you so much. Next up, we have Jill Stewart Keller. And go ahead and state your name for the record and proceed.
Good afternoon, Chair Joachim and members of the committee. My name is Jill Stewart Keller, and I'm the proud Assistant Director of Career and Technical Education at Northeast Metro 916 Intermediate School District. First of all, I want to say thank you, especially after your long night, for your attendance and just engagement with us here today. I'm here to kind of tell you about some of the types of opportunities that you, as a part of the Education Finance Committee, afford to youth and help prepare them and gain a competitive advantage and confidence about careers after graduation. In my role as the Assistant Director of Career and Technical Education at Northeast Metro 916, I'm able to support 20 career pathway programs that serve 13 different school districts that are members of Northeast Metro 916. We have over 1,000 11th, 12th, and students in transition grade programs that are preparing for post-secondary success. One of our most popular programs is our construction occupations program. You'll see pictures in front of you of a student-built home. In 18 years, we've built 18 homes, one each and every year, from the ground up. Our students work alongside subcontractors. Our instructor serves as the general contractor and oversees the project. And this is thanks to a partnership with the City of North St. Paul. The City of North St. Paul identifies less desirable properties, and then they raise the home that's on that property, and thanks to their resources, our students get the opportunity to actually build the home, and then the city then takes care of the sale of the home in their community. Other CTE, Career and Technical Education, site leaders like myself would love to afford their students the opportunity to build a home like we get to because of our partnership with the City of North St. Paul. Changing the language and adding intermediate and independent school districts to this particular bill would be very powerful to allow schools to take that learning to higher levels, rather than offering, as you can imagine, an English class with a textbook or maybe even Chromebooks. We're talking about real life work experiences that will lead to careers that will fill the need for a skilled workforce that we know we are so dire in need in our communities.
All right, thank you so much. With that, members, I don't see any public testifiers. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Doris, for bringing this. I've actually been in this house. They had an open house last summer.
That's cool.
it was interesting. It has a basement. It was, nice. It was finished. It was surprising. I think this is an excellent bill. It's an excellent use of funds. Unfortunately, Representative Hedell is not here, but he would make a comment that all the paperwork is in order. We don't have to worry about the nonprofit status of the school districts. So this is exactly what I think we need more of, which is, the students that are looking at some of the technical trades at an early age, that they get hands-on experience and also provide really great housing in their local communities. So, again, I commend you. Absolutely support this, and there's no fiscal note either. So,
thank you. Well, thank you. There is a cost, Representative Anderson, but another committee is carrying it. We always love to hear that. So we had to. Representative Norris had to make a stop here to make sure that we could add the different opportunities for the intermediate. So, any other comments or questions? Seeing none, Representative Norris, final comment.
Thanks, Chair Youakim. And I will just clarify, we're not appropriating any new money as part of this. We're simply opening up eligibility for the schools to apply to the existing challenge grant program here. And we think that they'll be very competitive as applicants, given that notion of being able to provide affordable housing while also teaching construction skills to young people and getting them introduced to the trades. And so appreciate the supportive comments from the members here of the committee, and looking forward to hopefully seeing this appear over in our housing omnibus bill.
Thank you, Representative Norris. With that, I will move House File 2492 to be laid over for, sorry, we don't have to do that. What would be the motion? Oh, we'll just lay it over. House File 2492. We just have to lay it over. It's being taken care of in other places. We'll get the language straight, and we're all good. So thank you, Representative Norris, for carrying such a wonderful bill. Next up. Sorry, members, we're just having. Yep, we have some strange logistics going on because people are ducking in and out today. We have House File 1175 coming up in a few minutes after the next bill. But the testifier, one of the remote testifiers, has to leave for a medical appointment. So if you don't mind, I think I'll have Denise Moody. She's testifying remote to testify quickly on House File 1175, which is the third-party billing bill that I'll be presenting, just so we can have her comments, and then we'll move back to Representative Frederick. Go ahead. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you for your consideration of my schedule. I appreciate that. My name is Denise Moody, and I am a social worker and work with Rochester Public Schools, and appreciate the time to talk with you today about House File 1175. I am going to just adjust my testimony a little bit because I am the first speaker on this. So this is a bill that allows us to receive federal Medicaid dollars for social work services that are provided in schools to special education students. This is a bill that I personally have been working on for over 10 years, and I think others have been working on for even longer, and is a really important time in responding to the mental health needs of our students. As you're aware, probably every 3 years we do something called the Minnesota Student Survey. And last year, our 11th graders, on a question responding about if they had considered suicide, 32% of our 11th graders that are currently seniors responded that they had seriously considered suicide. This was an 8% increase over previous, in 2019. And it's indicative of what we're feeling in our schools, that the mental health needs of students are rising. We want to increase the number of mental health providers and looking to do that. And one way that we could fund more positions is by receiving federal Medicaid dollars for services that we provide in schools, similarly to the way other 20 states across the country have done, by allowing the evaluation report and the individual education plan to serve as the authorizing document to document medical necessity for mental health services. You may not be aware, but the social workers that we have working in schools have the same education, the same experience, the same licensure as social workers or therapists that are working in the community. We are licensed in the same way, except that we have another level of licensure in addition to our Board of Social Work license by PELSB. So we are uniquely positioned because we see students every day. We know that a lot of families and students experience many barriers to accessing services in the community, whether that is because of transportation, scheduling, cost, stigma, finding a provider that is a match for their cultural beliefs, that accessing services can be really challenging. And so schools stand as the number one de facto mental health provider for students, and we want to expand those services. In Rochester, this would mean approximately about $925,000 of funding that we could draw down annually for services that we're already providing to students. We want you to pass this bill because we think that this is what's best for Minnesota students and families, and really is a win-win across the board. So thank you for the time today, and I appreciate your consideration of this bill.
Thank you so much. Members, now we'll jump back on schedule, and we have House File 2637, Representative Frederick. Vice Chair Clardy, would you like to move House File 2637 before the committee today?
So moved.
And Vice Chair Clardy, it looks like there's an A1 amendment. Will you move that as well?
Also moved.
Thank you. With that, Representative Frederick, welcome to the House Education Finance Committee. Would you like to briefly describe your A1 amendment?
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. My A1 amendment specifies that the funding appropriated in this bill goes to the Mankato School District.
Thank you, Representative Frederick. With that, members, are there any questions about the amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of the A1 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. The A1 amendment's adopted. Representative Frederick, proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee. I'm pleased to present House File 2637. This bill will bring Project Success to Mankato. This program currently partners with the Minneapolis School District to deliver proven experiential learning opportunities that enable middle and high school students to dream, plan, and prepare for their futures beyond high school. It gives students real-world experiences that go beyond the traditional classroom setting and expose them to opportunities previously thought out of reach. The program is particularly beneficial for underserved youth who would have otherwise had little chance to participate in such activities. Included in your packets today is a letter from my local school district superintendent, Paul Peterson, who is a supporter of this proposed legislation. Madam Chair, I would turn it over to my testifiers.
Thank you. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Hello, everyone, and thank you, Chair. My name is Caitlin DeVos. I have worked with Project Success for 9 years, and I am the Director of Administration. Project Success will be 30 years old next year, with the program starting at Minneapolis North High School in 1994 and growing to now work with all 6th through 12th grade students across all of the Minneapolis public middle and high schools, 15,000 students and their families annually. Our mission is to motivate and inspire young people to dream about the future, help them take steps to get there, and give them the tools they need for the rest of their lives. We work with each student in every school we serve over a 7-year period of time. And we do this in partnership with English teachers and principals as we help to meet the unique needs of the school community and their students. We've worked with more than 200,000 young people in our 29 years with our proven model of experiential learning, which includes the following program components: our monthly in-classroom workshops, where our facilitators lead conversations and activities focused on future planning and goal setting, decision making, whole child development, and community building; our expeditions, which include college tours to all types of educational options, career tours at work sites, global experiences, both virtual and planned trips, outdoor adventure field trips to local state parks, and week-long overnight boundary water trips. We have certificate classes after school at our Project Success Institute in career and life skills with topics including coding, money management, cooking, and bike repair. And finally, our arts programming, which includes middle school musicals, theater field trips, and residencies, which is connected to the curriculum students are learning in their classrooms, and bringing students and their family members to evening and weekend theater experiences. These programs are offered at no cost to students and with a focus on dismantling barriers to access and inclusion. We offer transportation, language translation, childcare, food, and more to ensure that students can participate fully. Our program has impact. The Minneapolis Public School District has evaluated our program and shown that participation in our programs result in statistically significant positive gains in on-time graduation rates, attendance, and grade point average. One of our high school principals shared, "With Project Success, kids build more adult and peer support, more self-understanding, and more life skills critical to their development, helping us as educators to increase student engagement, motivation, creative thinking, and build a stronger, more supportive school environment." We have grown slowly over the years, entering new schools in Minneapolis at their request and when we had the resources to build and sustain that partnership. We are ready and excited to have impact for more students in Minnesota, and that is why we are here today. The demand is there for our program. I have a long list from the past 9 years alone of students, parents, teachers, districts, and partners at the state asking if they could have Project Success for their kids, because there is no program like us in this state. We are excited to continue our programming in Minneapolis and expand to work with more students in greater Minnesota. We've had some great conversations with the superintendent and the team at Mankato School District, and this seed money would help us to grow into Mankato and bring our workshops and experiential learning opportunities to their students and schools. Thank you for considering this request.
Thank you so much. Next up, we have Laura Garcia.
Thank you, Chair Joachim and members of the committee. My name is Laura Garcia, and I started at Project Success 15 years ago, but not as the Director of Schools and Curriculum, which is the position I hold today. I started as a facilitator who worked in the classroom at a number of our schools in Minneapolis. And one of the things that I get the privilege of doing is building relationships with our principals across the district. And the thing that they say is it's so important that Project Success continues to be in Minneapolis, and actually they want to see it grow outside of Minneapolis because they see the impact. Our students continue to face challenges with mental health, belonging, and having a sense of community, academic motivation, and our team at Project Success continues to work closely with students, their teachers, and their principals to address these challenges. We facilitate experiences of excellence for students to connect with one another and caring adults, mentor and help explore, plan, and take action on students' futures and their education, career, and life paths. It sounds like a lot, but we do it. Last night, I was emailing actually one of our alum. His name is Daro, and he is now actually a career pathway partner for us. A few years ago, he brought an idea to us with his company, Quality Bike Products, to create a certificate where students can actually get a bike tech certificate and then hopefully a job in a bike tech field. That's one of our four certificates that we offer. He wanted to ensure more BIPOC students had opportunities to get involved in the bike industry, and over the last 2 years, we've had 50 students go through this program. This summer, Daro is also volunteering to lead a group in the Boundary Waters, a week-long overnight Boundary Waters trip, and what's wonderful is that the impact continues to grow even after he is no longer a Project Success student. Daro shared with me this quote in our emails, and when he heard that we were going to have be at the hearing today, he said, and I quote, "My first memory of Project Success goes back to my middle school years of them offering the expeditions to the Boundary Waters. I remember how much trips like that in my youth inspired me to this day to respect and protect nature. In my high school years, my experience was one of self-discovery. At a time in life when you are trying to figure out what kind of adult career path you wanted to walk down, Project Success was there to meet students where they are at and really help them discover their passion, as well as assist that student in mapping out a path to achieve their goals. Now in my adult years, I reflect on PS's impact on my life, and because of how much it did for me, I now give back to PS by volunteering. I cannot stress the amount of positive impact PS has with students that engage with the program. PS truly makes sure every student is heard, engaged, and passionate about their future." I would also like to say that unfortunately, one of our final testifiers, Shadia Munier, who was supposed to be here today, lost a close family friend this week and had to travel today to be with her family, so she could not be here. She asked us to share her testimony on her behalf. This is her testimony in her own words about her experience with Project Success. "My name is Shadia Munier. I am a Project Success alumna, having graduated from Patrick Henry High School in Minneapolis. Last year, I graduated from Augsburg University. Early on, Project Success planted the seeds for the lessons I now understand, the importance of values, dreams, setting goals, imagining the impossible, and going for it. Project Success gives me workshops, theater experiences, tours to colleges, and even a global experience to France. What Project Success has done for me was all about my well-being, who I wanted to be, and what I wanted to do with my life. Project Success introduced me to theater for the first time. One of my vivid memories is from a mixed-blood play called Hijab Tube, about a Muslim woman debating if she would wear her scarf or not in the United States. We were able to stay and have a talk back with the actors, and being able to talk to a strong Muslim woman that also made me feel powerful is something I will never forget. I realized from that conversation that I could be on my own journey and make my own decisions. Something about seeing live actors portraying powerful figures within a powerful story on stage really helped me see who I could be and what I could do. Helping me make those decisions were in my in-class workshops with my high school facilitator, Micah. Micah used to talk to us about colleges and so many other post-secondary options. What I loved was learning that I had options. I could go to college, pursue a trade, or travel. He provided me with all the resources I needed to feel the power of the choice was mine. I had a better picture of my future, and it gave me actionable steps. Project Success moves the workshops outside of the classroom and into the real world. I took advantage of many Project Success college tours. These tours helped me discover what I wanted and didn't want in a college, to make a more informed choice. And that led me to Augsburg University, where I graduated last spring. During my time in Project Success, I was inspired to apply for the student representative role in the Minneapolis Board of Education, apply to 13 universities, run for student org board positions, and apply for a study abroad opportunity, all of which I was accepted to. That's what Project Success looks like in the real world. It looks like students having the resources, the support, and the courage to go for everything they set their mind to. Through Project Success, I have learned to appreciate everything and everyone in life. Project Success helped me to understand that the world is bigger than what we are exposed to. Therefore, our dreams and our goals can be far beyond what we think we are capable of. Growing with this organization and watching them uplift students through the craziness that has been our lives these past few years has given me so much hope for a better future, a future filled with courageous go-getters that have no limitations on their dreams. Thank you all for your time and consideration helping Project Success grow to work with more students and families in Minnesota. Shadia's story is one of many, as we have worked with more than 200,000 young people and their families over the last 29 years. I'm excited by the possibilities of expanding to work with more students in Minnesota so we can have even greater impact. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you for your time. Members, I'll go to the table for questions or comments. Representative
Sensenbrenner. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Frederick. Just a quick comment. I'm one of the 200,000 students that had a chance to work with Project Success. I've seen the way that you all have built in Minneapolis Public Schools and kind of just become known as one of, you know, the really strong school partners doing a lot of different things to support students. So when I had a conversation with Project Success earlier this term, was really excited to connect with Representative Frederick and recommend this program. And I'm really excited that you all are going to hopefully be expanding to other parts of the state.
Thank you. Any other questions, members? Seeing none, Representative Frederick, final comments.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Committee, for giving us the time today to hear this bill. It is, as someone who has not had Project Success in their district, but I can definitely relate to the idea of different styles of learning. I was not a person growing up that learned very well simply sitting in a classroom, listening to someone at the front of the room just speaking the whole time. What I can remember are the experiences and having really great instructors who were able to tie that experience that I was going through to specific learning objectives. And to this day, I can still recall some of that time. And so the idea of bringing this, something like this, that was about experiential learning to my district, it really hit home and I got excited about it. So thank you, Representative Sensenbrenner, for the encouragement on that as well, and committee members for the time today, and I hope to have your support. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Representative Frederick. And with that, I'll lay over House File 2637 for possible inclusion in a education finance bill. Next up, members, I'm going to turn over the gavel to Representative Clardy to present my chief.
Thank you.
So our next bill on the agenda is House File 1175. And Chair Joachim, would you like to move House File 1175 before the committee with possible intention of layover for inclusion in the Ed Finance Bill?
That would be my motion.
You may go ahead.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair Clardy and members. Thank you for your time today for House File 1175. As you heard from the previous testifier that had to speak earlier, our school districts use third-party building to help mitigate the cost of servicing some of our kiddos with special needs. Our school districts are facing deficits, as we all know. They are facing challenges to their budgets and their special education cross-subsidies growing. It is my hope that we'll be able to tackle some of those fiscal challenges this year, and this bill is one of those ways we can help mitigate a portion of that gap. Currently, there are a variety of services that a school district can bill Medicaid for when providing for a student whose disability requires health-related services and who is eligible for Minnesota healthcare programs. These services include occupational therapy, speech, language, and hearing services, as well as therapeutic services and supports. Licensed school social workers can also currently bill for the evaluations and reevaluations they do for students, but not for the actual services they provide due to the outcome of those same evaluations. The bill would allow for reimbursement by medical assistance of a licensed school social worker's services based on a student's IEP if the services are provided by an individual who holds a master's degree in social work, is licensed by the Board of Social Work, is licensed by Appellate as a school social worker, and currently holds an independent clinical social worker license from the Board of Social Work, or holds a graduate social worker or independent social worker license and is supervised by a licensed independent clinical social worker. Members, you can see why I have notes in front of me today. Lots of qualifications there. Other states have allowed these types of services to be billable to Medicaid and have brought the additional federal money into their state in order to further serve their students. This bill would allow Minnesota to tap into those funds that have been left on the table, funds that could directly support our students who have the most needs. Members, in your packets, there's letters of support that include a joint letter from the Coalition of Licensed Social Workers, PACER Center, National Association of Social Workers, Minnesota Chapter, Minnesota Administrators for Special Education, and a variety of statewide school boards and school administrative groups. There are also a few individual letters of support. I have two folks with me today that can further highlight the need for this legislation, and I will turn it over to them.
Wonderful. Please state your name for the record, and you may proceed.
Madam Chair, committee members, good afternoon. My name is Rob Arnold. I'm the Assistant Administrator for Medicaid Reimbursement in St. Paul Public Schools. I'm a licensed speech-language pathologist and a proud parent of two young adults who have both received mental health supports through the schools. I'm here to support House Bill 1175. I've been in my current role for about a year and a half. I have quickly learned that St. Paul Schools alone is missing out on $4 to $5 million in annual reimbursement, while school districts across Minnesota are missing out on over $20 million in reimbursement for special education mental health services. This means that schools must use 100% of their educational funds to pay for special education services, rather than seeking available federal dollars. To be clear, federal money available to schools is being left on the table. At the center of this issue is the Children's Therapeutic Supports and Services, or CTSS, benefit certification and assessment requirements. CTSS requires school social workers to complete the components of a diagnostic assessment and give a DSM-5 mental health diagnosis to a child as part of their special education evaluation, even though these requirements are actively discouraged by the Center for Medicaid Services. These evaluation requirements are also discouraged by state work groups made up of community mental health providers, who said that, one, there should be no wrong door for accessing reimbursement for school-based mental health services, and two, that there should be alternatives to the components of the diagnostic assessment for documenting the need for mental health services. Additionally, CTSS is the only benefit that allows for reimbursement of skills training or of services provided by mental health practitioners. Since rural school districts often only employ mental health practitioners, no other benefit would allow those districts to seek reimbursement of services. As a result of all of these inequitable barriers for schools, only 6 school districts in Minnesota seek reimbursement for mental health services provided as part of a student special education plan. As a colleague of mine says, CTSS is a meaningless benefit. Fortunately, House Bill 1175 solves these problems. It recognizes that not all children with a need for behavioral health services meet the criteria of a mental health diagnosis. It honors the role that school social workers fulfill in preventing a mental health diagnosis. It honors reimbursement of services currently being provided and allows for schools to expand those services. It allows for equitable reimbursement for all Minnesota school districts. It recognizes that the mechanism for reimbursement is already being used for other health-related special education services and therefore would not cost the state anything. And last but not least, it recognizes the quality of mental health services that school social workers already provide every day to students in Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Arnold, for your testimony. Next up, will you please state your name for the record?
Sure. Good afternoon, Madam Chair and committee members. Thanks for the opportunity to testify on behalf of House File 1175. My name is Kathy Dalmas, and I'm a member of the Minnesota School Social Work Association. I am a licensed school social worker and a licensed clinical social worker. I have been a Minneapolis school social worker for 32 years, and currently my role is managing our school social work services in our district. As a licensed independent clinical social worker, or LICSW, I have completed the same educational coursework requirements, the clinical supervision requirements, and the licensing exam as an LICSW that would choose to practice social work in, say, a community mental health clinic. I am also held to the same continuing education requirements and practice standards that exist in Minnesota social work licensing statute. For many years, I, along with my school social work colleagues and leaders in our state, have been advocating for a shift in current thinking as to how medical necessity is determined for IEP health-related services provided by school social workers. This shift is needed to reasonably bill Medicaid in a school setting. As Denise in the video said, 20 states across the country currently bill federal Medicaid for behavioral health services provided by a clinically licensed school social worker or a school social worker under the supervision of a clinical social worker. In those states, behavioral health services are deemed medically necessary through a comprehensive special education evaluation and IEP process. That special ed eval process usually occurs over a period of 30 days. It is a lengthy eval process. It is conducted by a multidisciplinary team and considers the cognitive, academic, social, communication, sensory, emotional, behavior needs of a student. The special ed eval process considers qualifications for meeting criteria for an educational disability, but also considers the necessity for related services, such as PT, OT, speech, social work services. Schools are able to use the comprehensive special education evaluation and IEP for all of those services just named, except for school social work services. Not making any adjustments to the process to bill for behavioral health services on an IEP, as Rob said, Minnesota has left millions of federal Medicaid dollars on the table. Those funds are intended to offset the cost of special education-related services, including school social work services. Special ed has been historically underfunded, and we need this funding stream to provide the services students are entitled to. So, 2 main points I hope you take away from my brief testimony today. Number one, licensed clinical social workers and graduate social workers supervised by LICSWs are highly qualified mental health professionals and practitioners guided by a national practice model that directs us to provide evidence-based education, behavior, and mental health services. And number two, it's time for a change in our state Medicaid billing system in order to allow schools to access federal Medicaid funds for social work services on an IEP. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Dalness. We have no members of the public that have signed up for questions, so I'm going to go to members' questions right away. Representative Jordan.
Thank you, Chair Cordy. And thank you, Representative Joaquin, for bringing this bill. I feel like I'm back in HHS, the 1 year I served on my committee. So I'm hoping you can break this down for me a little bit. And I really appreciate the testifier who said the 2 points, qualified practitioners and change the Medicaid billing. So I always get concerned when I hear we're leaving federal dollars on the table. How much federal money are we leaving on the table? And then what would that money be used for? Would it go into the general fund? Would it be used for mental health support? Can you help me out here?
Chair Joaquin?
Representative Clardy, yes, I've been told roughly $10 million statewide, and that just would come back in the billable services. So it'd go right back for services provided. It's just that due to the way the CTSS model is being used instead of just using the IEP, and the CTSS model is being required to use a DA versus just the IEP. Basically, the same social worker with the same qualifications, if they worked across the street in a private clinic, could bill that service. They walk across the school and work with that same student, they can't. So we're trying to bridge that gap and fix it.
Representative Jordan.
Thank you, Chair Cordy. And I have one question that is actually a policy question, so I apologize. What change would the students receiving this healthcare or mental health services, would anything change from a student or family perspective as a result of this bill?
Representative Clardy. Oh, sorry.
Representative.
Thank you, Chair Clardy. No, not that I know of, but I will look to my testifiers and to speak into the microphone. Thank you.
Go ahead, Ms. Dalness.
Representative, these are services that are already being provided. We're just seeking reimbursement, so no change to service. Thank you.
Any follow-up, Representative Jordan?
No, Madam Chair. This seems like a pretty easy one, even if it's a little complicated.
I agree.
Get money, same services. Seems good.
Right. Representative Edelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Joaquim. I know this bill has been worked on for years, and as a social worker, graduate social worker myself, clinical social worker that worked in an outpatient mental health clinic, it's funny, my really good friend from graduate school is a school social worker now, and she was here at a school the social work day at the Capitol, and she was advocating for this. And I just want to commend you on the work that goes into this, because it has been years, and I think you have people talk about this, just really looking at the complexity of how the IEP and making sure, you know, just all of it kind of runs smoothly. And it's a big deal for schools. It really is. And so I think it will make a big difference. And it could mean, you know, hiring more social workers, right? And so, which we know from testimony throughout this committee that they're needed. And so thank you. Thank you for all this work.
Representative Joaquim, do you have any final words on the bill?
Thank you, Chair Clardy. No, thank you, Representative Edelson, too, and Representative Jordan. Third time's a charm. I think it's 3 years now. And it is complicated, but I want to thank DHS for coming to the table and helping us figure out how to do this. And as we mentioned in another bill, too, the language as is might need to be tweaked as we move forward because those discussions are still happening. And I love the comment piece in the valley. We just want to get this done. So. Chair Clardy and members, thank you for your time and questions. So social workers play an integral role in all of our children's education. While this bill focuses on our kiddos with special needs, social workers work in our entire school population, and they make our learning environment safe and healthy. Currently, licensed social workers can bill Medicaid for the evaluations and re-evaluations they do for students who qualify for special education services. This bill would allow those same licensed social workers to bill Medicaid for the services they provide due to the outcomes of those evaluations. I would appreciate members' support, and thank you.
Great. With that, the chair lays over House File 1175 for possible inclusion in the Education Finance Bill. Next up is House File 2920. Chair Joaquim, would you like to move House File 2920 before the committee with the intention of layover the bill for possible inclusion in the Education Finance Bill?
Thank you, Chair Clardy. That would be my motion.
You may present your bill.
Good afternoon, Chair Clardy and members. This is a much easier bill to understand. Thank you for hearing this. This is basically the forecast adjustment bill. This bill makes adjustments to fiscal year 2023 appropriations to match the February 2023 forecast data to the best estimates of the state aid required for each K-12 program in appropriation. Generally, all change in the estimated pupil counts or a change in program participation is the most likely cause of a forecasted adjustment. The changes in the appropriation are real, and the changes must be enacted in law, but adjustments have no fiscal impact when measured against the K-12 budget because the changes are built into the forecast estimate of that base. So I want to thank House Research for putting together such a very good summary for me to even understand it. And with that, that's it.
Thanks, Chair Youakim. We have no members of the public that signed up to testify for House File 2920. Are there any questions on House File 2920? Okay. Seeing none, Chair Youakim, do you have any final words on the bill?
Nope. We need to do this. Thanks.
Okay. So with that, the chair lays over House File 2920 for possible inclusion in the Education Finance Bill. And then I'll hand the gavel back over to Chair Youakim.
And I will invite my testifiers to come up and they can sit with me.
Thank you, Representative Senator Murrow. Welcome to your committee.
Thank you.
Would you like to place the bill before us?
Yes, I would like to move that House File 2797 be considered for possible inclusion in the Education Finance Omnibus.
Thank you, Representative Senator Murrow. With that, please present your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Tired but happy to be here today to talk about this bill, House File 2797, which would give funding and appropriation to nonprofit 826 MSP to support students in developing their writing skills. Previous to becoming a state legislature, I worked for this organization for 5 years. I was the executive director. So I know firsthand the amazing work that this organization does. Want to assure my colleagues that I no longer work for the organization. I left that position in June, so there, none of this funding would go to me in any way. But I brought this bill because I really believe in the critical work that this organization does. Our committee has had lots of conversations this year about literacy, and I think I spoke to this earlier this week in relation to the governor's bold literacy plan. Whenever we are having conversations about literacy, I always just want to make sure that we are including the other half of literacy that is often left out, which is writing. There's a lot of emphasis right now on reading and ensuring that the young people within our state can read, but I also think it's really critical that our young people can write and express themselves. Something that we talk about at 826 MSP is that reading is access. Reading provides access for young people to other people's words, other people's narratives, and writing is power. Writing is the ability to tell your own story and communicate your own truths. A26 MSP is part of a national organization that has done some research on writing across the country, and they found that starting in third grade, it's recommended that each student gets access to 30 minutes of writing instruction a day, and that by far, you know, students across the country are not getting that. So A26 MSP steps in to try and fill that critical need through providing free in-school and out-of-school writing programs. They partner with schools in... A little song break.
Just stand up and wake up. There we go.
They partner with schools in Minneapolis, St. Paul, and the surrounding suburbs. There is a letter in the packet from a teacher in Robbinsdale who they are currently working with, and they also provide programs for students at their youth writing center located in South Minneapolis. We know that for students to be successful going into the 21st century workforce, they need skills to be able to communicate. They need writing skills to be able to communicate, and 826 supports students in developing those skills. Finally, they not only support students in writing, but they also support students in publishing, and I believe that they brought some books with them today that they can pass out for the committee to look at. This elevation of the student work is really key to their model to ensure that students' writing is not just you know, sitting on the page of a lined paper, but is being elevated into a book that is sold at stores throughout the Twin Cities, that is sold online, and students that have that ability to see themselves on the printed page. With that, I would love to turn it over to my testifiers. We have Dr. Jamal Adam, Christetta Barini, and then some young authors who are also here with us today.
Thank you. Go ahead. Whoever wants to go first, state your name for the record and proceed.
Madam Chair, committee members, my name is Jamal Adam, and I'm the executive director of 826 MSP. Samantha used to be, but I replaced her last year. And I'm still trying to live up to our level of performance. 826 MSP is a nonprofit organization dedicated to empowering Minnesota's youth by helping them develop their creative writing and expository writing skills. I'm here today to express my strong support for the bill that would allocate additional funding to our organization, allowing us to expand our reach and impact the lives of countless students across the state. For many students, particularly those from underserved communities, access to quality education resources and opportunities is limited. This not only affects their academic achievement, but it also affects their ability to succeed in life. 826 MSP addresses this issue by providing free innovative writing programs to students aged 6 to 18, helping them discover their voices and build essential skills that will serve them well in the future. Our programs include after-school tutoring, in-school writing workshops, leadership programs, and field trips, all designed to foster love for learning and writing in a supportive and engaging environment. In addition, we provide opportunities for students to publish their work. And you have seen some of the books that our students wrote. And I would also like to say we treat those students like the author that they are. And so when we sell their books, we give them royalty for their work. And so we publish their work, and this gives the students a sense of pride and accomplishments. Over the years, we have seen firsthand transformative impact of our programs have on students we survey. Not only do they show significant improvement in their writing skills and academic performance, but they also grow in confidence and in self-expression. If I may give you some statistics here, 90% of students surveyed agreed that 826 MSP helped them improve their writing, and that 826 MSP challenged them to do their best work. 90% of students felt their thoughts and opinions were valued, and they felt safe and supported. Another 93% of we partnered with teachers and we surveyed them how do they feel about our partnership, and 93% of teachers we partnered agreed that 826 MSP motivated their students to write and increased their persistence in writing process. Our focus is on serving low-income, BIPOC families, and English language learners, and we help them to address the educational inequity and ensure that every child has a chance to succeed. Our success also is a testament to the incredible network of volunteers and mentors who generously give their time and expertise to support our students. This network includes dedicated teachers, talented writers, and passionate community members, all united by a shared belief in the power of education to change lives. We partner with 69 volunteers, 23 teaching artists, 12 schools, and 43 educators to deliver programming that serve close to 1,300 students annually. However, our work is far from done. There are still countless students who could benefit from our programs, but we need additional resources to reach them. The students who serve suffered have been negatively affected by the pandemic, and studies show that the pandemic erased decades of progress for students of color. By supporting this bill, you will enable us to expand our services, deepen our community partnerships, and ultimately make a greater impact on the lives of Minnesota's youth. Investing in A26MSP is not only an investment in our children's education, but also in the future of Minnesota. When we empower our youth with the skills and competency to pursue their dreams, we create a strong, more vibrant society that benefits all. In conclusion, I would like to urge you to support the bill and help us continue our mission to amplify the voices, stories, and the power of K-12 PIBOK students through writing, publishing, and leadership programs. Your support will not only make a difference in the lives of children we serve today, but also in the countless generations to come. Thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you. Next up, we have Christetta Borini. And then finally, Sabrine Abraham. Go ahead, state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you. Yes, my name is Christetta Borini, and I am the program director for A26MSP. This is my fifth school year working for the organization, and I'm here to tell you about the impact our programs have on the students, families, and teachers with whom we have the privilege to serve. As my colleague Dr. Adams stated, when we survey our students, families, and teachers, these stakeholders report high rates of satisfaction in our programs. We have seen multiple students join two or more of our programs, parents become board members, and teachers bring their classes back to our field trips year after year after year. We have extremely high retention rates, with the majority of students in our Writer's Room, After School Writing Lab, and Young Authors Council programs participating for 2 years or more. In addition to these positive reports, we see tangible gains in writing skills as well. Two times a year, we assess student writing abilities. For students, these assessments look like something they do with us every day, simply write a story. For us, we look at that story and we analyze it on a six-factor scale called the Analytic Writing Continuum, a rubric developed by the National Writing Project. The continuum examines writing skills based on content, organization, voice, fluency, word choice, and conventions. So from March 2022 to November 2022, our students improved their writing assessment scores by nearly 35%. This is a marked improvement considering in the 21-22 school year, our students saw a score increase of 11%. Since 2016, A26MSP has published 6 books of student writing, with our 7th, titled More Than One Voice, due to be published later this spring. Our students have been published in several national anthologies as well, including projects collaborating with Amanda Gorman, Jason Reynolds, and the current U.S. Poet Laureate Ada Limón. These opportunities matter. Alumni of our programs have gone on to speak at the commencement of their graduation ceremonies, win large scholarships, and become working writers and journalists here in the Twin Cities. But don't just take my word for it. You can hear it in the words of our students. We have one student, Suleika Youssef, an 8th grader at Hennepin Schools, who couldn't be here today because she was ill. But she says, I love A26MSP because they are always helping me and others get better as students and as people. I've built new friendships and connections with other students and volunteers. They are caring and supportive, and I feel lucky to be a part of this community. And with that, I'll hand it over to my friend and our longtime participant of our programs, Sabrine Ibrahim.
Thank you. Go ahead and state your name for the record and proceed.
Hello, everybody. Sorry.
That's okay.
Okay, hello, everybody. My name is Sabrine Ibrahim, and I'm 12th grade, High Ground Academy at St. Paul. I came to America when I was during 2017. I moved in America since I arrived here. I have been participating in A26 MSP programs and tutoring. Their service is an important place for young people to use writing as a tool, spark their shine, encourage for young people for the community and help the professional success. I started going A26MSP in 8th grade, and I have been still going until tonight. I value A26MSP because when I was new in America, I needed assistance with speaking English, reading, and writing. A26MSP encouraged me to write more, read more, and helping for my assignments and homework at school. My favorite thing to do after finishing my homework was having a topic for the day writing anything about, such as like poems, stories. That helped me more by speaking and not being shy in front of everybody. Because of 826 MSP, I can write essays for college. I went youth government for 3 years, and I spoke up and perfected my English. And last but not least, I learned how to find myself. I find my patience and what's my purpose in life. In fact, 826 MSP are hard workers who work with young students in important for Twin Cities youth. They are given the tools they need to believe themselves as leaders and artists from young age. Their talents or skills are being honored by 826 MSP. They support them and for their community. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for sharing your story. Next up, I believe we have three more students that might be remote, right? So we have Zulfika Yusuf. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Suleika is ill, but we do have Zahra Ahmed online, okay. I believe.
Thank you, Zahra Ahmed. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Hi, my name is Zahra Ahmed. I'm a 12th grader at Higher Ground Academy. I joined A26 MSP Writing Program in December of 2021 during my second semester of junior year. I understand the struggles that come with being from an unprivileged community. Growing up, I always felt like I was at a disadvantage, especially when it came to education. One area that I always suffered was with writing. I found it hard to express myself on paper, and my grades suffered too. A friend told me about the A26 MSP program. In the program, I learned about different writing techniques, such as how to structure my essays and how to write persuasively. That also helped me in other parts of school, and my grades went up too. A26 MSP also helped me apply to college and write scholarship essays, and it gave me a chance to look at more career options. I really appreciate the opportunity to be a part of A26 MSP program, which has had a strong impact on my academic and personal success. This bill has my support because of education finance that funds money to help students with their writing will open up more doors for other students who need those resources and support. Thank you.
Thank you so much. And do we have the final student, Neela Hammer, online too? Neela Hammer, please state your name for the record and proceed.
Hi, thank you. My name is Neela Hammer, and I'm a junior at Minneapolis South High School. 826 MSP runs a writer's room at my school, and I have participated as a member of the Writer's Room Advisory Council since October of 2021. I personally have benefited from 826 MSP's programming because my involvement in the writer's room has helped me improve my leadership skills and foster connections both with my peers and with local authors. I get to help plan and lead events such as discussions about mental health topics and workshops with published authors. For example, last month I co-led a discussion about navigating relationships among different perspectives and expectations. I posed questions to the group and people were free to chime in with their thoughts. Leading this workshop helped me become more confident in my ability to lead events, as well as made me think much more deeply about how different everyone's perspectives are on everyday issues. Experiences like this are invaluable for me as a writer, a student, and an educated community member. Additionally, I can see the impact that 826 MSP has on our school community. The writer's room is always full of people studying, connecting with each other, and receiving help on their writing projects. Having this space available means that kids have a safe place to go when they are struggling in a class, or know that there are people and resources available to help them. 826 MSP promotes equity in education by serving traditionally underserved students and ensures that everyone has access to tools that empower them and help them achieve their educational goals. In this way, the Writers' Room has united South High School community and held space for everyone to flourish socially and academically when they may not have otherwise been given the opportunity. I believe that with more funding, 826 MSP will be able to extend this positive impact even further, which will ultimately benefit students, teachers, and entire communities. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you for the students for sharing your voices and for bringing this bill forward. Are there any questions or comments? I've got
Representative Hill.
Thank you, Chair Joachim, and thank you, Representative Sensor Mira, for bringing forward this group of people in this wonderful bill. This is amazing. I served for the last 24 years as a high school English teacher, and I need you to hear and know that this is such an impressive product. You need to be very proud of the work. I think it's important for us to highlight that empowering our students through their expression leads to deeper learning. And the evidence of that was all around us here over the last 20 minutes or so. And, you know, I want to go back to a comment made by Ms. Hammer a moment ago on Zoom that this program allowed for students to connect with one another through their learning. And Dr. Adam, I'd love for you to share a little bit about how you go about connecting students through their learning, because I think that's a very powerful concept.
Thank you, Dr. Adam. And if you can be brief, we've got a few more bills on, but thank you. Dr. Adam.
I will be very brief. Thank you, Representative Hill. You know, I worked in higher education most of my professional life, and my background is I'm a psychologist, and I know one of the biggest challenges that the students face as they go through their educational experiences is lacking a sense of belonging and a feeling of isolation and alienation in the educational environment. And so when students are feeling that support from their peers and the staff that and the educators who are working with them, it helps them have a feeling that this is my place, I belong here, and if I'm facing challenges, there are people who are here to support me. And unless you have that sense of a belonging, it's hard to overcome, you know, the academic challenges that students face in their educational experience.
Thank you. Representative Hill, follow up?
No, thank you for the bill, and I look forward to seeing its conclusion, hopefully.
Thank you. Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Sensor Mura, and all the testifiers. I have a quick question because Representative Fudell is not here, but I'm also a 990 as a shark. So as a former executive director of a nonprofit, I love looking at these things. And I'm wondering, I was wondering before, and I'm wondering after looking at those, what's the origin of the name? And it looks like 12 and a half years ago, there was a name change. So if you can share with us what 826 MSP kind of stands for. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Purcell.
Good question.
Dr. Adam.
That is a question I'm asking a lot, and it we are part of a national network of youth writing centers, and the first one that started over 20 years ago was in California, and that was their address, 826 Valencia. But now it took a whole new meaning. We celebrate 826 Day on August 28th, and you're all invited to come to our center on August 26th.
Thank you. Representative Purcell, follow up. Thank you. Representative Ream.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Sensor Mira, for bringing this forward. It looks like we've gotten all kinds of different books. I picked this one up and looked at some of the poems. They're beautiful. And I was an English major, love poetry, so I'm very impressed with this. Have never heard this program before, but I really support it, knowing all the beautiful work you've done here. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. Representative Grisha.
Thank you. Representative Pudel is not here, and so I'll follow up Representative Purcell. I'm glad you're a 990 shark as well, and maybe you and Representative Pudel can get together so you guys can do the vetting for the rest of the committee. And just a nod, it sounds like great ideas, and thank you for the full disclosure and transparency. And I just would add to this, and I think Representative Purcell would, in her comments or Pudel, when we get the transparency right, then we can focus on what the community and the organization is doing. And that's really what we need to do. So thank you for that. I know we talked beforehand, and great ideas should stand on their own, and we should look for ways to make sure they go forward if we can without uncovering trouble. So thank you very much. And that would be the same questions for all the nonprofits, so I'll just save us that. I'll just say it this way. If you're a nonprofit, get your stuff to Representative Purcell and Hudella so the rest of us don't have to ask questions.
Thank you, Representative Grisha. Representative Perez Vega.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Sensenmura, and our testifiers. Great to see some familiar faces. I love 826 MSP. I had the honor of being an artist in residency during the 2020 school year, which we all know was very, very difficult. And these writers in this book, these students, were the champions of capturing history in a time where the world was looking at Minneapolis in the lens of the unrest. These kids are the background, their school, their stories are part of this history of what it is to not only survive being refugees or new to this country or knowing more than one language and trying to be better at the language of this country, but adapting their stories to be a part of the context of what it looks like to be a student in the state of Minnesota. It was such a privilege to work with those kids and then to see how the leadership in this organization adapted. I love seeing the testimony from the writer's room. It's such a beautiful space, so comfortable. I wish every classroom could be like the writer's room, that is welcoming to not only the students, but also to the teachers in the school. I'm just profound. I love this program, and I just am really grateful for the work that you do with those kids in the Twin Cities, and in particular in the south side of Minneapolis. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Perez Vega. With that, members, I'll lay over House File 26. We are all very tired. Can't even say a full sentence. So, Representative Sensenmura, for all the work you put into this, please, final word.
I can keep it brief. I just want to say that as someone who has known Sabrine for the last 4 years, it is so special to have her here with us today and to have watched her grow as a young author. I think I'll end with a quote from her writing, which is that I write for my rights. And I really do believe that all of our students have a right to have access to literacy, and 826 is a program that helps us do that. So I hope that it can be considered for possible inclusion in the omnibus. Thank you so much for the testifiers, and especially the students that were able to speak today. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Sensenmura. And with that, I will now lay over House File 2797 for possible inclusion in an education finance bill. With that, we have Representative Hill with 2638. Representative Hill, welcome to your committee. Would you like to move House File 2638 before the committee?
That would be the motion.
Thank you, Representative Hill. House File 2638 is before the committee with possible inclusion in the education finance bill. Go ahead and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Joachim and members. I'm thrilled today to be here to introduce House File 2638 on behalf of PlayWorks organization. As we know by watching them, play is how our kids process the world around them. It's how they build relationships. It's how they learn to cope with even the hardest of times. Meaningful play is crucial to a child's cognitive, physical, and social development. Yet, sadly, children today play 50% of the time less than their parents did when they were kids. PlayWorks is the only nonprofit in Minnesota leveraging the power of play in schools to transform children's physical and emotional health. And this is a bill, and I had a flashback as I was preparing for today, to when I became personally conscious of the power of play. And it was when I was 10 years old, in 1987. So if it gets a little blurry in here in the time machine, bear with me. But in 1987, it was early January, I just moved to a new faraway magical place called Minnesota. It was bitter cold, and I was walking into my brand new school for the first time. I was quite nervous. It was Monday morning, and what that meant for that class and the procedures there was spelling pretest. Post-test on Friday, pretest on Monday. What unfolded, I won't bear you with the details, was a failed spelling test. Very nervous, Josiah Hill, I still remember this, got 4 correct out of 25 words. And because my seat was at the back of the room, I had to pass my paper up. And it was well known how the new kid did on a spelling test. Now, I can look back on that memory and laugh, because that was not the most powerful thing that happened to me that day, or the most powerful memory. I had one ace that I could play, and it happened during recess, because I noticed that the kids at my new school played the same game that I loved to play at my old school. It was Foursquare. And the ability to operate at recess, the ability to move, the ability to let my guard down, to laugh, to make connections, and to interact, to play. It was about playing. And even though it was bitter cold that day, I didn't notice. And when I got home, I wasn't frustrated or down because I had been nervous and didn't perform on a quiz. It was because I had the opportunity to play. And I'm so proud to be joined here, to be allowed to join, is the way I'll put it. Ms. Shauna McDonald, who's the executive director of Playworks, and also with Principal Andrew Skinner. And they're going to share more about this powerful program that can transform young people's lives. So with that, I'll turn it over to Executive Director McDonald.
Thank you. Go ahead and state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee, and Representative Hill. My name is Shauna McDonald, and I am the Executive Director of Playworks Minnesota. And as Representative Hill just really pointed out for us, play is really critical for children, and play in school and recess are really the most important time of day to them, whether because they absolutely love it or they may potentially be dreading it. So Playworks, we are a nonprofit organization. We have been around for 25 years. And we partner primarily with elementary schools to increase opportunities for meaningful play and to utilize recess as a catalyst for school climate, academic engagement, and for kids to have a lot of fun, make friends, and learn and practice critical skills they need for success in the classroom and in life, such as teamwork, empathy, dispute resolution, and many things more, including increased physical activity, which is good for their bodies and great for their brains. So currently, we are partnered with 45 elementary schools in the Twin Cities metro area, reaching 18,000 children this year alone. We prioritize high-need schools, and we have an overwhelming request from schools in the Twin Cities metro area and the state of Minnesota for support in programming who lack the resources to partner with us. We deliver programmatically. Our impact is validated through randomized controlled studies conducted by Stanford and Mathematica. In addition, we have 14 different published studies that support the work that we do. In 2017, RAND recognized Playworks as only one of 7 elementary school programs helping to support social-emotional learning in the nation as a Tier 1 intervention under Every Student Succeeds Act. So as Representative Hill shared, our outcomes, we increase physical activity, we increase children's sense of belonging, and we increase attendance. We also decrease bullying and discipline incidents and physical and verbal altercations, and we increase students' engagement with each other and positive relationships with adults in the building. We implement programmatically in 3 components. So we partner in the classroom and supporting teachers in play-based learning, teaching 30-minute lessons that we help support teachers' acquisition and knowledge of how to do these on their own. They are fun and silly games. We play like alligator swamp tag, zip zap pop, things like that. But these are games that help build community, school climate, relationships, help kids try on skills, and we're speaking their language. All kids have a universal behavior of play. All humans have a universal behavior of play. It is the vehicle in which young children learn and acquire skills. We support teachers with these tools so that they can replicate through brain breaks, minute movers, and attention getters, and partner with their children. We also address recess. Recess is the largest classroom we have in a school, and I guarantee you, kids are learning something at recess, right? So we are able to impart a shared understanding of a variety of different games that kids can play together. We are not structured play. Everything is a choice. And through a shared understanding of how to play together, kids are able to create a fantastic community. Today, you would be shocked to know that many kids do not know how to play foursquare, kickball, jump rope, hopscotch. So we bring these back to kids. We ensure that they are able to have the skill sets to successfully do these together. And we also provide them with tools like dispute mediation. We play rock, paper, scissors. And that helps kids solve an issue if they're unable to talk about it, because who got to the ball first is a really critical thing for a kid. We also work on transitions to and from recess. So we're helping kids decompress as they're exiting recess and getting in a state ready to learn. Playworks delivers these components in partnership with youth leaders. So the third component of our program is called the Junior Coach Leadership Program. We actually have some students that will testify with us here today, virtually. This is probably the most powerful part of the program. We have fourth and fifth graders that we partner with. In each school, there is a cohort of 15 to 20 youth leaders. They apply for the position. 99% of fourth and fifth graders in the schools that we partner with apply to become a junior coach. We work with their educators to select kids that will benefit the most from the program. They participate in a year-long leadership program that develops their skill sets as leaders, and then they take shifts working with younger grades at recess. So they work with kindergartners and first graders. They do not work with their own grades. They participate in their own recess. And through this partnership, we see tremendous things happen. Tremendous things happen for the school climate, the academic engagement. We see bullying plummet. We see discipline incidents plummet. And programmatically, because we embed in the school day, we are not taking away teaching time. In fact, through controlled research, we actually give back teaching time 18 hours per classroom, per teacher, per year. Because the children have acquired the skills and we have systems and processes in place to support their success at recess, which is their community, where they're in the driver's seat and they're creating their own community. And when we give them the tools they need to be successful, they make beautiful things happen. So in your packets, you have letters of support from the University of Minnesota, letters of support from teachers, and also junior coaches who wanted to share with you today. I thank you for your time today. We appreciate your support on House File number 2638.
Thank you. Members, we only have until 4:30 and we still have another bill. So we have two more bills, so we need to pick up the pace a tiny bit. Next up, we have Andrew Skinner. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee, and Representative Hill for allowing me the opportunity to share my experience as you consider House File number 2638. My name is Andrew Skinner, principal at Pinewood Elementary. As principal at Pinewood Elementary in Moundsview, it is my job to create an environment which is responsive to each child, resulting in the very best school experience, and that experience includes recess and play. But with many competing priorities for schools, recess time can be an afterthought. For many years, we ran a traditional recess model, which didn't look much different from the experience many of us as adults had. Kids outside, whistles blown, time to go inside. Then we brought in Playworks, and quickly learned recess matters a lot. Much more than we imagined. Our students are exceptional and deserve an exceptional recess. We've seen a clear transformation of that experience. Rather than the potential of students being excluded or wandering around the field or playground, they now have clear options to get involved and make new friends. Rather than waiting for adults to tell them what not to do, students have adults proactively teaching them skills such as turn-taking, empathy, and teamwork. Most impressively, Rather than students relying on only adults to lead organized games, we grow the leadership skills of our own students, our junior coaches, who lead games and promote inclusion so every student can join in. I have seen firsthand how teaching these skills creates a lasting ripple effect through our school culture. Just yesterday, our first graders took a field trip to an indoor playground. A grandmother and her three young grandchildren happened to be there at the same time. She admitted to our teachers that she considered leaving when she saw our large group of energetic 6 and 7-year-olds pour into the venue. However, when our students not only were respectful and courteous towards her grandchildren, they invited them to play in their own games. It was exactly what happens on our playground each day. Now we see our students are not only ready to learn when they come in from recess, they are gaining confidence, resilience, and empathy, as well as conflict resolution and leadership skills. To illustrate some of those leadership skills, I am thrilled to have three of our own junior coaches joining us today.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Skinner. We're going to go virtual to see our students.
Hello, my name is Molly, and I'm a junior coacher of Pinewood Elementary. Some kids may ask, what is a junior coacher? Well, that's what I'm here to explain about today. The first reason that us junior coachers decided to be junior coachers is that we love helping out kids if they have a problem that needs to be solved, or we can find a solution if we have to or if we need to. Second reason is that we love to participate in games of helping out, and some examples are jump rope, fastest tigger in the West, and soccer, so we can sort out which team and which kids can belong on each team. And then the third and final reason that we love being junior coaches is that if a kid is like wins a game or loses a game, we give them a pat on the back or a high five, because us junior coaches just love helping out people, and thank you.
Great. Thank you, junior coaches.
Hello, my name is Nehemiah, and today we'll be playing a game. It's called This or That. So if you want to stand up, you can. So when I say do this, like, if I say do this, like, you do this, right? Just copy me. So, like, if I say do this, and do this, and then do this, that's basically the first part of the game. And the second part is, like, if I say do that, that means you don't do what I, you don't do. So if I say, like, do this, do this, do this, do this, and then do that.
Oh.
So if you did it right, you just give a pat on the back. So now we're going to play a quick round. So we're going to play a quick game.
We're not done yet.
It's all right. So do this.
Oh, we can't see.
Do this.
Oh!
Hi, my name is Ethan. I am a junior coach here at Pinewood Elementary. Today, I will be teaching to you the Good Look Celebration Clap. Now, you might be asking, what is a celebration clap? Well, I'm here to tell you today. So a celebration clap is at the end of a game if someone needs to, like, if we're just really rattled up and you need to calm down, you just do a celebration clap and start taking breaths. So this is how you do a good look celebration clap. So first, you clap once, and then you make a mirror, And then you say, I look good.
I look good.
Okay, so today we're actually, so now we're going to do one.
Okay.
In 3, 2, 1.
I look good.
Thank you. We love fireworks.
Of course, I picked the absolute wrong time to leave the room. That looked amazing. Members, seeing no further testifiers, let's move to the table for comments and questions. Representative Clardy?
Thanks for bringing this. Play is essential. It's, you know, it deals with that social emotional piece, but it's one of those foundational skills that you need to learn because it will last with you for the whole, for your whole life and everything that you do. So like even like when you're an adult and doing your professional job, you just have to know how to be able to interact with people respectfully. So very cool concept. Thank you.
Thank you, members. Any other further questions or comments? Representative Edelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Hill. This Playworks is a great organization. They did a lot of great work in Edina, and I'll thank you for that. And so thanks for carrying this bill. I do appreciate it.
Thank you. Anything else? Anybody else? Representative Hill, did that elementary school happen to be Lily Lake Elementary?
It may or may not have been, yes. Indeed.
He makes me feel old because he went to school with my little brother. So, Representative Hill, final comments.
In the interest of time, to be brief, coming out of the past 3 years and 3 weeks, now more than ever, our students deserve this. Our students need this. It decreases bullying. It decreases discipline incidents. And it provides that sense of belonging our kids need. And in the spirit of 1987, apparently the big movie that year was Wall Street, so I will close in the spirit of Gordon Gekko from that movie, that play is good, play is right, and play works. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Hill. With that, we will move House File 2638 to layover for possible inclusion in an education finance bill. Next up, we have Representative Paris Vega with House File 2918. Representative Paris Vega, welcome to your committee. Would you like to move House File 2918 before us today?
I would, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Paris Vega. The bill is before us. Go ahead and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. House File 2918 is a bill for a one-time appropriation to the Minnesota Alliance of Boys and Girls Club to provide matching funds to expand their programs to more communities in Minnesota. The Minnesota Alliance of Boys and Girls Clubs represent the 57 Boys and Girls Club sites across Minnesota that serve over 25,000 kids ages 6 to 18 years old every year. The Minnesota Alliance currently includes club sites at the Red Lake and White Earth Reservations, Duluth, Little Falls, St. Cloud, Detroit Lakes, Bemidji, Rochester, and the East Side and West Side neighborhoods in St. Paul, and just up the street from the Capitol at Mount Airy, as well as on the north side of Minneapolis and in South Minneapolis with the South Side and Little Earth. As an alum of the West Side Boys and Girls Club, I know Boys and Girls Club plays a critical role in providing a safe and secure place for kids of all ages to go between their time when they leave school to the time they go home to their families. And I was the kid that would go there on the weekends just to make sure that all of our friends could enjoy our field and basketball rec time. Clubs provide a variety of educational and youth development. Minnesota Kids in K-12 and their Workforce Development Initiative have focused on providing comprehensive programming around job exploration, skill building, and career development. I'd like to pass this time to give to our testifiers that are here today in support of House File 2918. As a Boys and Girls Club alum, I'm just going to squeeze that in there again. This is an opportunity where students, kids, are able to also connect with those students and kids from all throughout the state of Minnesota. I was one of those kids that really loved to visit the other club sites, and I got to learn about the other communities that make this state great. Thank you.
Thank you. Go ahead and state your name for the record and proceed.
My name is Brian Donaldson. I'm the executive director of the Minnesota Alliance of Boys and Girls Clubs. I want to thank Representative Perez Vega for authoring this bill and supporting us. And it just right now hit me that I think one of my proudest moments in the last 13 years is that we had a club kid be the author of one of our bills. And so thank you so much. And it's awesome. It just hit me, but that's awesome. So, as we said, Boys and Girls Club is an after-school organization that serves 33 communities and 4 Native American reservations across the entire state. We do that with emphasizing academic success, healthy lifestyles, and good character and citizenship. Youth pay little to nothing to attend the Boys and Girls Clubs. Communities, especially in greater Minnesota and on Native American reservations, face a shortage of quality after-school care for school-age youth. According to the After-School Alliance, for every child currently participating in an after-school program, there are 3 waiting for an available program. Minnesota communities have been coming to Boys and Girls Clubs even more recently, looking to expand to their communities. However, Minnesota communities should raise about 2 years of operating funds to make it sustainable going forward and have a Boys and Girls Club in their community. This bill would provide matching funds to assist communities' efforts to open new Boys and Girls Clubs in their communities. This funding would allow clubs to expand to at least 10 new communities throughout Minnesota, primarily in greater Minnesota and Native communities, and would increase the number of youth in quality after-school care and provide expanded educational enrichment programming to youth at all clubs throughout the state. To speak more about the work being done and possibilities to help even more youth, I have the CEO of the Boys and Girls Clubs of the Twin Cities, Terrell Brum.
Go ahead and state your name for the record, please, and proceed.
Hi, my name is Terrell Brum, and I'm the president and CEO of the Boys and Girls Club of the Twin Cities. Madam Chair and committee members, I am also thrilled to have, for the first time ever, have an alumnus of the Boys and Girls Club of the Twin Cities author our bill. So thank you very, very much. I'm honored to speak with you today about our commitment to expand the opportunity to serve more kids in underserved communities across the state. Boys and Girls Clubs of the Twin Cities has worked for many years to close the achievement and opportunity gap in the Twin Cities for underrepresented K-12 youth and families. We have invested in a transformational and all-inclusive program model that supports the achievement of essential skill building from kindergarten through post-secondary. Providing access and opportunities go hand in hand with setting goals and having high expectations for every young person. We have a responsibility to our youth and to our community to deliver holistic programming that makes an impact, one that extends beyond the walls of the club to shape exceptional adults ready to reach their full potential as healthy, productive, and compassionate citizens. At our core, Boys and Girls Clubs of the Twin Cities is committed to advancing cultural equity and inclusion for all youth. We are an organization that has built an evidence-based education program using quarterly assessments in reading and math that guide instructional activities and curricula daily at the club. Using multiple curricula to address student learning styles, the club has supported a significant number of youth to reach grade level reading and math over the last 6 years. Our North Star goal is for all youth to be on track for a successful future beyond high school graduation. By investing in youth starting in kindergarten and staying with them over the course of their school career, we can ensure young people will have the skills to reach their full potential, graduate on time, and be ready to achieve their dreams in adulthood. The Twin Cities is fortunate to have some of the most successful and innovative education technology companies in Minnesota. These companies focus on helping schools and Boys and Girls Clubs address a wide range of skills with a diverse student population. The Boys and Girls Clubs of the Twin Cities Education Council members include CEOs and COOs from Capstone Publishing, Renaissance Learning, Cambium, Edmentum, and Read Naturally. Working together, we are bringing transformational opportunities to club kids. While Boys and Girls Clubs of the Twin Cities has fully integrated social emotional learning across all programming, we recognize at this point that SEL alone is not enough to respond to the deep and collective impacts of racial trauma, the pandemic, and other forms of oppression our young people are experiencing in our club communities. In May 2022, we launched a pilot partnership with culturally connected licensed therapists that are offering group therapy and, if requested, individual therapy at each of our club sites. Youth Voice and Choice is embedded across the Boys and Girls Clubs of the Twin Cities program continuum. It is our responsibility to create safe and inclusive spaces for young people to express themselves and become advocates for change. We encourage Youth Voice and Youth Choice by providing all kindergarten through 12th grade children and teens opportunities for input and feedback regarding program content and delivery. Boys and Girls Clubs of the Twin Cities is ready and committed to expanding these opportunities to new locations across the Twin Cities metro. With the additional funding, Boys and Girls Club organizations throughout the state will be able to open doors to new club locations serving kids and communities that previously did not have access to high-quality, out-of-school time programming. For the Twin Cities clubs, the funding will support the opening of two new locations during the 23-24 school year. With the support and urging from the West Tonka superintendent, we will open a new club at our Voyager Environmental Center in Mound, Minnesota. And we also bring a Boys and Girls Club to the V3 Center in North Minneapolis. In addition, multiple sites in St. Paul have asked us to come provide programming over the course of the next year to year and a half. We have experienced an incredible amount of outreach from communities outside Minneapolis and St. Paul, and we want to be able to provide them with a Boys and Girls Club in the next 3 to 5 years. Our organization strives to build a diversified fundraising portfolio for new growth that includes both public and private investors. Our request today will ensure that we can further provide solutions to access gaps within the metro and throughout the state. As you can see, after-school programs like ours not only provide safe places for youth, but they provide the programming needed so youth can become successful adults. Underserved communities need youth-serving programs now more than ever as we work together to bring youth-focused solutions to the forefront of our collective work in the state of Minnesota. Thank you for having us here today.
Thank you so very much. Next up, we have Lamar Bitley. Lamar Bitley, I'm sorry, I'm mispronouncing your name. Please pronounce your name for the record and proceed.
For sure. Thank you, Madam Chair. Representatives, thank you for having me here today. My name is Lamar Bitley, and I'm a Boys and Girls Club of the Twin Cities alumni. I'm an immigrant from Liberia. Sorry if I'm a little off right now. I'm fasting, so so I haven't ate or drank all day today. So
that's okay. We didn't sleep all night, so exactly. we're right there with you.
So, yeah, we're on the same boat here. I'm an immigrant from Liberia, and I came to this country when I was 10 years old. And coming here, literally, my first home was 2 minutes from here, Martin Airy Townhomes here, and my parents still live there to this day. Coming to America, though, learning the language and trying to find a sense of belonging and community. I was fortunate enough to have a Boys and Girls Club 30 seconds from my house, where I was able to find not just a community, but a place I can call home that helped me build the necessary skills and tools to become who I am today. With the Boys and Girls Club of the Twin Cities, I was able to be equipped with the skills literally when I was an eighth grader and a freshman in high school to get my first job in high school, where I was able to help my parents then pay bills and rents and be a part of the family and help financially support. I was able to get my first job through the clubs. And then also, along with that, I was able to build leadership skills and character building skills that I was able to take with me throughout college, right? I was a kid that didn't think I was going to graduate high school. I not only graduated high school, but I went off to college and got 2 degrees and also started a business with the skills and the tools the Boys and Girls Club equipped me with helping people and getting in touch with your community and really caring about humans as people. Because at the end of the day, if we don't care about one another, nothing else will, nobody else will. And these are the values the Boys and Girls Club taught me earlier on. And I've implemented that in my business today, where I co-founded a reusable water bottle company, giving back to people in need. Every time somebody buy one of our bottles, we donate 50% of the profit to help provide clean, safe water to people in need. And again, these are some of the examples the Boys and Girls Club is doing in our great state today. There's a lot of alums like Maria here and a lot of other amazing alums that were able to take the tools and the skills the clubs provided and really became those responsible and caring citizens that we all strive to be in this country. And I am so grateful to be here speaking with you all. The Boys and Girls Club, to this day, I get a lot of my peers asking me, hey, can we get a club in my community? Can we do this here? Can we do this here? And really, it's just the community. People are, this great state needs that. And a lot of our youth need the space to go, to have their voice heard, to have a place where they can find opportunities. I keep saying this over and over again, but the Boys and Girls Club is really where passion meets opportunity. And I've been fortunate to be able to be in this in a place where I've gotten a lot of opportunities, and we hope to really expand that out to more kids here in the state of Minnesota.
Thank you so much. With that, we'll go to members' questions or comments. Seeing none, I think you hit it out of the park there. Representative Paris Vega, final comments.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I think, you know, Mr. Bility said it. This is an opportunity to give the kids to the next step. I was that kid that was coming out of high school, recently diagnosed with type 1 diabetes, trying to keep up with my homework and a chronic illness. And the Boys and Girls Club leadership, alongside with the partnering local cultural organizations that they partnered with to make sure that I had the ability to keep moving forward. And I just remember my first recording demo was because Boys and Girls Club found out that I was paying $100 an hour out of my own little income of working at Dayton's and Cub Foods. And they provided a funding grant for a music recording studio on the West Side Boys and Girls Club. And we've seen folks take that studio to be American Idols and the Voices now and state reps too. So let's support the Boys and Girls Club throughout the state. It works. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Representative Paris Vega. With that, I'll lay over House File 2918 for possible inclusion in the education finance bill. And with that, Representative Paris Vega, we will have you present the last bill here. House File 1629, would you like to move House File 1629 before the committee?
I would like to move House File 1629. Yes, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Thank you. And I hate to do this, but we have about 10 more minutes before we have to wrap up.
Yeah. So let's just get straight to the point here, because I know we're all lacking on rest and have a weekend. Let's say hello to the weekend. I'd just want to talk about the McPhail's Learning with Music program that addresses concerns that young children experiencing economic hardships face a high probability of not being ready for school than others. And Learning with Music uses a tool to address that issue. Quality early childhood education is critical in promoting the development of our youngest learners and their future success. As a mom to soon-to-be four-year-old, I know how much music has already opened the horizons towards her interest with math and reading and all literacy programs. She's been singing since she was out of mama's womb, and I look forward to the programming that McPhail has to offer in this great state to support those initiatives that our kids who learn best with music does. So with that, Madam Chair, I'd like to pass it over to our great director, who I've worked in the past with many years ago on their teaching advisory committee to build curriculum for more cultural advocacy in the state's music programming. But without further ado, I'm going to pass this on to our director of programming.
Thank you. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Yes. Thank you, Representative Perez and Madam Chair and House Committee members. My name is Diana Babcock. I'm the director of Sing, Play, Learn at McPhail Center for Music. It's our early childhood music program. I'm going to move it closer because I feel like I'm a long ways away. We work with ages 0 to 8, and I'm excited to tell you about our Learning with Music program. As Representative Perez said, that music is so important to the learning of young children. It's, as we know also, quality early childhood education has a lifelong impact, and especially for those living in economic hardship. Music is an unknown solution. It gets attention so learning can take place. It promotes self-regulation and so much more, and it's one of the few things that uses both sides of the brain. Our Learning with Music program is an amazing, unique, evidence-based program for ages 3 to 5 years experiencing economic hardship for the teachers and their families. And one thing that I come from a background of teaching early childhood for many, many years now, outside of McVale as well, noticed that when I started, and I still notice this, that there's not as a lot of music happening in the classrooms. And so, and there's, it's such a lost opportunity because so much can be done with music. And so with this program, it's unique in that we train and coach early childhood educators to integrate music into daily activities. Throughout the day, like lining up, transitioning, writing their letters, creating art, brushing their teeth, you name it, anything. And we found that to be very, very successful in getting kids to self-regulate and be able to learn. So we did a longitudinal study for 3 years and came up with some amazing results of 150% increase in inhibitory control just by the integration of music, meaning teaching the early childhood teachers how to use music in the classroom beyond the group time. Again, using the music helped them to control their impulses, to learn. And again, this is all through the training and coaching of early childhood educators.
I'm sorry, Director, to interrupt, but I should have laid it out a little bit better in the beginning. So you had a hearing in early childhood because there was an amendment to expand your online program. That's why you're here. So if you could kind of focus on that, that would be wonderful. Representative Perez-Vega.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, I also wanted to include that information in regards to the online school partnerships. And here with that, I'd like to pass it over.
Oh, I didn't mean to cut off your testimony if she wants to wrap it up.
Okay.
Yes, please. I can be super fast. So with this support, what we would like to do is to be able to develop Learning with Music professional development opportunities for early childhood educators in the state of Minnesota, and could be online and in person. Develop that, deliver that in many different fashions, greater Minnesota, rural Minnesota, you name it, and then expand our programming so we're able to offer in-person programming like this on a larger basis. And so, again, our youngest learners are so important. They're our future. We need to help them be supported to learn, and music is that tool. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Next up, Elizabeth Winslow.
Greetings, Madam Chair and Committee. My name is Elizabeth Winslow. I'm the Director of School Partnerships at McVale Center for Music. And prior to this, I spent about a dozen years teaching band in public schools. And I'm here today to share why supporting online school partnerships with McVale as part of this bill is crucial for today's students. We ask a lot of our educators, and especially our music educators. My first full-time teaching position was in Newfold in Minnesota, a small community about 17 miles north of Thief River Falls. The job entailed elementary band lessons, junior high band, senior high choir, pep band, all home games, and jazz band. I had just graduated with a degree in instrumental music education, hadn't sung in choir since high school. And the entire music ensemble experience for the entire of Marshall County rested solely on 23-year-old me. These are the types of situations that we at McVale Center for Music support in Greater Minnesota and Title I schools. We provide accessible online low-cost lessons, sectionals, and classes at a steeply discounted rate. In affluent and metro area school music programs, bringing in teaching artists for a residency, having more than one music director, offering private lessons during the school day are commonplace. But this is very rare in Title I and Greater Minnesota schools. We are disrupting that inequality by bringing our exceptionally talented and passionate faculty into classrooms to support the already incredible efforts of Minnesota's E-12 educators. This past year, through online school partnerships, we've taught everything from music in early childhood classrooms in partnership with Diana's team to all-state audition preparation, choir sectionals, and electronic music production. We partner with Wilder Research, and I want to point out two statistics which are in your packet on the page from us. 88% of students report that participation in online school partnerships resulted in an increased motivation to participate in school music ensembles, as well as increased motivation to do well on their instrument. 67% of participants reported that working with us had a positive impact on their mental health and made them more excited to come to school. I've yet to come across a teacher of any subject who hasn't said that disruptions from the pandemic deeply impacted students' behaviors, engagements, and motivation in school. In this landscape, positive data like that as an educator and parent is powerfully compelling. Through access to high-quality online experiences with McVale, we can help reach students who may need a reason to engage with school. Thank you for your time and your support of students across Minnesota.
Thank you. Thank you so much for your testimony. I'm sorry that we're a little crunched in today on time. Questions or comments at the table? Representative Edelson.
I will just say really quickly, thank you, Madam Chair, that I'm a big supporter of McPhail. My kids, all three of my kids went through it, and Cheryl Hensgard, who used to be there, literally I used to like sing brushing the teeth and playing with the toys and all the fun stuff. So you would have been proud, Representative Perez Vega. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Perez Vega, final comment.
I think our testimony will give you a pretty good overall of the programming that happens at McPhail and how important it is to serve not only our early childhood learners, but also those online courses to really adapt to greater Minnesota and support the classrooms in throughout the entire state with music that we know has been cut throughout the state funding. And we need to ensure that we add the A in the STEM with the arts. Gracias.
Thank you so much, Representative Perez Vega. Members, want to thank you. Oh, sorry. House File 1629 is laid over for possible inclusion in the Education Finance Bill. First, I wanted to quick thank staff for all the time you've put together over the last few months, putting all these packets together, getting the testifiers coordinated, having seamless remote testimony. It takes a lot of time and energy. I think today alone we had 50 different public testimonies inserted into our packets. So there's a lot of stuff there. And also, members, to give you kind of a pathway of what's going on next week. So we just heard our final bill. We will be unveiling the education finance bill on Monday, most likely by noon, if we can have it sometime before the end of the day on Monday. What we'll be doing then is walking through it on Tuesday at our regular committee time. On Wednesday, we will have testimony during our regular committee time. And amendments will be on Thursday, and we'll have an extended amendment deadline to 5 p.m. on Wednesday. So just double-checking my facts here. So with that, members, is there any questions about the timeline for next week? I know Representative Kreesh and I already kind of went over it. So with that, members, thank you so much for all your work today. We are adjourned.